1-800-283-298-WRIN.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the RIP Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIN.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the RIP all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101. The RIP.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Bill Clinton proving one more time he'll talk to anybody for a crumb of attention as he talked to us again.
What about Jennifer Flowers? I mean, do you regret lying about her on 60 Minutes?
No, I don't. I don't think so. No.
Well, why not?
Because I wanted to get elected, and I just felt like if the nation's first big exposure to me was hearing about me spanking a big strange ass, yanking on a handful of her blonde hair, or staring at the tattoo on the top of her head, I don't think I would have been elected, and I just felt the battle for the direction of this country was more important.
What tattoo on the top of Jennifer Flowers' head?
It says, let go of my ears, I know what I'm doing.
Surely, that just reminded me, on Oprah, you sounded like you really felt bad for Monica and everything she went through.
Well, as I said, they plunked that monster down in a hotel room, grilled her, then they were going to wire her big old floppy, ever-expanding and I just felt terrible about that. I mean, that for flashing that quivering planet for an ass at me, that just ain't right.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. Riff. 101-101. W-R-I-F. Riff. 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 Rocks. When it's 5 o'clock, it's time to rock with the Riff.
Weekday afternoons at 5, right here on 101 WRIF.
Your ride home rocks with Big Daddy Arthur P. Playing your Riff Rockin' Request. Call in your Riff Rockin' Request to the Grand Poobah at 313-298-WRIF.
Email them to arthurp@wrif.com.
Hell, you can even fax them in before you ditch the office at 248-398-6219. Call for the tunes that you want to hear. Win yourself some killer Riff swag and let the ride home rock with the Riff's own Big Daddy Arthur Penalo.
Riff is the only station letting you pick your favorites and program the station three times a day at noon, 5, and 9.
It's your all-request Riff Rock and Ride Home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Winter City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
F.com, streaming us also. You can reach us by email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My website, you can see a lot of the information we're going to talk about tonight at peterwerbe.com. PETERWERBE. It's WERBE, peterwerbe.com. And we've had about a quarter of a million visitors, so it's really turned out to be something that I'm happy that I decided to put together for a lot of reasons. Although, you know, maybe I shouldn't say this, and this isn't modesty, but it's becoming less of a necessity. I still think it's good. There's good information, terrific links, things that you probably won't see elsewhere unless you check every site on the web. Not that I do. And it's not so much patting myself on the back. I mean, sometimes people say, man, your website is great. Well, all I do is copy and paste. That's it. I just go around to a bunch of different websites. People send me things at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And it's nice to have an audience that put together is smarter than the host. You know, these right-wingers, they announce sometimes, I mean, they're such arrogant characters, that they know better than the entire listening audience, which is preposterous on the face of it. But maybe for conservatives, it's true, because they're not always, I mean, you know, they have sort of native intelligence. And they can do things like science, but they can't think creatively, they really can't think out of the box. And it's folks like you that allow the material on there to be expansive, to look in the nooks and crannies, and to think creatively in manners, and in a manner often that I haven't. And I go, wow, I never thought of that. So you're not ditto heads, right? You think for yourselves. You know, there's another way not to think for yourself. The old what do they call him? Fundraiser in chief, the resident sitting in the White House. George W. Bush. This is a scary quote. Bush quietly meets with the Amish. The Amish, sorry, I'm not saying that right. Bush quietly meets with Amish. That's in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. You know, those folks with the big hats and just ride buggies. Here's what Bush says. At the end of the session, Bush told the group, "I trust God speaks through me. Without that, I could not do my job. So here is the man illegally sitting in the White House who was not preferred by the majority of Americans say, I trust God speaks through me. That is truly scary. Because then any decision you make isn't even a humanly determined decision or utterance. It is God ordained. I mean, God isn't this dumb. I mean, God can put one sentence after another if there is a God. George Bush can't. I trust God speaks through me. And then, you know, the formal word for it is malapropisms. There was a character in an 18th century play. Someone call and remind me or write me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com and remind me of the 18th century play. But it was Mrs. Malaprop. And Mrs. Malaprop was doing things like George W. Bush does and says. You know, things like, I can't remember that for sure. I know what it means, or I know what it feels like to put food on your family, right? Remember the one of the more famous ones like that, or some of the famous gaffes, particularly the one at the end of Fahrenheit 9/11. So God, we find out, since if this is true, if God speaks through George W. Bush, God is of limited intelligence. Isn't that one of those syllogisms? How would that go? I don't know. I can't even figure it out, to tell you the truth. 313-298-WRIF. We're going to be giving away passes, T-shirts, and what else? Oh, yeah, the book for the new movie, the new documentary coming out called The Corporation. Now, The Corporation is an extraordinarily interesting film. I just took a look at it. And with Fahrenheit 9/11 breaking ground, taking the lead, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of dissident documentaries. Because we don't get it through the corporate media, certainly, which isn't liberal, regardless of what these conservative idiots contend. So it's up to Michael Moore, for instance, to do the job that you would think an opposition political party would do. See, we don't have an opposition political party in this country. We have another party called the Democratic Party, and oftentimes they're almost identical, and there still are some identical policies that the two hold. But George W. Bush and his regime are such far-right-wing radicals that there actually is a significant difference on a lot of issues, women's issues, the environment, the economy, lots of stuff like that, that make it a difference. But still, the other party hasn't risen to the level of being an opposition party. Because everything that now is being debated in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 is what the other, what an opposition party would be saying. So it wouldn't be a filmmaker. It wouldn't be in the form that we see it. And some people say, oh, he's taking cheap shots and all of that. Well, with nobody taking any shots, it's left to essentially artists. Even filmmakers are artists, right? Anyway, The Corporation is going to open at the main theater. That's in Royal Oak. It's on Main and 11 Mile Road. And let's see if I can quickly get a... and we're going to have an interview, by the way, at 1 a.m. Eastern Time with the director of it. But I was looking for a... a synopsis of it. Eminent Canadian law professor and legal theorist Joel Bakken contends the modern business corporation is created by law to function like a psychopathic personality. That's right. In fact, the name of Bakken's book, Bakken, I think it is The Corporation, The Pathological Pursuit of Profit and Power. Now, the key word there is pathological. So this is the film, the documentary, that's going to be coming to the Main, and it's going to be showing, hopefully, around other places as well. I've seen about half of it. Very engaging, very enlightening. I don't think it'll, in some ways it'll have the impact the way Fahrenheit 9/11 has, because Fahrenheit 9/11, for a lot of people, has really opened their eyes, things that they never knew went on. Connected dots, that some of the dots they didn't even know were connected. Now, a lot of this stuff, and again, this may sound like, well, let me say, though, at about 11:30 Eastern Time, we're going to be giving away passes to the movie, a T-shirt from the Corporation movie, and also the book that this is based on by Joel Bakken. So that'll be in just a little while. And then we'll do it at 12:30 as well. So we'll give away two packages, prize packages. And but you got to live in the area because you got to come down to WRIF and pick it up, just like, you know, the regular prizes here on the station. So that movie's happening, and everybody's saying, well, you know, Michael's film is really crashing. Yeah, a documentary that takes in $100 million, it's down to a lowly five. I mean, all these typical Hollywood films now are expectedly getting a bigger draw. No one ever would have suspected that Michael Moore's film would have this impact. Now, another one that's coming out is called Outfoxed. There was a film that, unfortunately, before Bush's unnecessary illegal war and invasion and occupation of Iraq, if more people would have seen that, Michael Moore's film might not have been necessary. We wouldn't have near 1,000 American dead, tens of thousands of Iraqi dead, and the absolute horror show and quagmire that Iraq is now. But this was by Robert Greenwald, the film I was talking about. It's still available, about Iraq, called Uncovered. And it's just all these suit and tie intelligence community dissidents that essentially says, I don't think anybody ever mentions the big L word, Bush is essentially lying about weapons of mass destruction. Of course, we all know that now. And using the L word, which, I don't know, even a year ago might have gotten people fired for saying the President of the United States lying to the American people, now is said routinely. Now, this film, which is called Outfoxed. Let me see if I have it here. Yeah. Outfoxed examines how media empires led by Rupert Murdoch's Fox News has been running a race to the bottom in television news. The film provides an in-depth look at Fox News and the dangers of ever-enlarging corporations taking control of the public's right to know. This is interesting. The people from MoveOn.org and other groups announced that on Monday, tomorrow, they will deliver legal papers to Fox News studio in New York City challenging the network's use of the tagline Fair and Balanced, including the president of Common Cause. He'll lead a news conference disclosing two legal actions in the matter. Because anybody with half a brain, which may be not everybody, particularly the Foxhole News. Remember we were calling it that during the war because they were the big cheerleaders. They weren't, what do they say? Something, we present you, we report, you decide. Isn't it something like that? Well, it's nothing but a bullhorn for the Republican Party. And Rupert Murdoch, the Australian who commands a section of American news reporting, is a far right winger himself of the Bush type and was just a cheerleader for the war. What, they're turning a little now. Maybe they realize, because ultimately Murdoch, like any corporation, in fact that goes back to the movie The Corporation, they have this pathological drive for profit and power, and Bush's fortunes are sinking quickly. And well that they should. I mean, every scandal, every lie, every ruse, every diversion that these absolutely vile characters have pulled on the American people over the last 3.5 years are out there for everyone to see. And people routinely, even in the mainstream media now, even these media whores that for so long refused to criticize a single sentence, a single verb or noun that Bush uttered, are now being critical in the manner that they should. Tonight, in over 3,000 houses across America, MoveOn.com and Common Cause members held what were called outfoxed parties. And what they did is they watched this new film by Robert Greenwald called Outfoxed, and together with Al Franken, the comedian, and director Robert Greenwald. In fact, if any of you were at any of these parties, please give me a call. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werbe. And where should we go next? So we got Bush saying that God speaks through him, and we can make two. Well, I mean, these are almost certifiable, what would you call them, certifiable conditions of clinical psychopathology. So this guy's a nut, is another way to say it. Anybody that thinks God speaks through them has got to be a nut. At least that's what we think in the 21st century. In the 15th century, it was okay for Joan of Arc to say, God speaks to me and through me and what have you. But when a modern political leader, as Bush told the Amish, that God speaks through me, and I guess with all of these mistaken phrases and jumbling words and not being able to get one coherent sentence after another unless he's got a script, that one of them's a bumbler and a bungler. Either George W. Bush is a bumbler or God is a bumbler. Now, most of you are religious. I don't know, most of you are religious. Most of you believe in a supreme being. So I got to believe you think that the fault lies with George, not with God. Or sometimes when people are speaking through you, it's a little tough. I mean, somebody was trying to speak through me. Maybe it'd be a little tough to repeat everything they said. Let me see. What do I have here? I got about a jillion things here. Oh, yeah, what we missed. Of course, now it's just been displayed for everyone, and I hope to everyone's satisfaction, that the rationale for the war against Iraq was a total lie. This was a week ago or so, and a scathing indictment of the nation's intelligence services. Now, listen to this closely, and I mean the structure of this, because this is typical news jargon. So, but there's a lot in here. A scathing indictment of the nation's intelligence services, a Senate reported, concluded Friday that the CIA provided false and unfounded assessments of the threat posed by Iraq that the Bush administration relied on to justify going to war. This is not the case. I mean, they pressed the CIA to come up with stuff, but they knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was a purposeful, intentional lie. And that's why, remember, the rush to war when the inspectors, Hans Blix and the UN guys, say, hey, we need about another month. No, we got to do it now because they're going to attack us at any minute. This was a matter of an imminent threat. So this turned out to be an enormous lie. And there's some Americans that are saying, I didn't know that. That's amazing. Well, all you had to do was read any number of websites, and including mine, during that time, and you knew all that. You have the New York Times now saying, oh, we made such a mistake, and we weren't critical enough, and we should have looked a little deeper into this. How could they not know that there were these substantive objections? Or not objections, exposés of the lies that were being told to us by Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld. And where are those? You don't even hear of Rumsfeld anymore, Powell and what have you. Also, we missed this one. U.S., because I've been off for the last couple of weeks, U.S. mulling how to delay November vote in case of attack, which I would read as if the poll numbers are real low for George W. Bush, and they're heading south now, and they're south of 50%. Gee, there just might be a terrorist attack, and they might have to call off the 2004 elections. And you can say, oh, well, they right away said they weren't going to do that, and they would never do it. A couple of things occur to me. Since this is broadcast worldwide, it almost seems like an encouragement or an inducement for someone to try to do that. I mean, you hear this... an attack at the beginning of November might mean that the elections would be called off. So isn't there a bunch of guys saying, hey, I hadn't even thought of that? If it's not that, it's a trial balloon. Let's see how the American people react to the election being called off. Well, the Bushco, Bush Incorporated, I mean, they said, let's see, I came in second, my dad's buddies on the Supreme Court said that I was the winner, and even the Democrats didn't object. In the Senate, if you see Michael Moore's movie, the people from the House of Representatives couldn't get a single Democratic senator to say, we ought to look at this, that something's rotten here, that this was a rig, a fix, a ruse. So let's see how the American people will respond to it. Well, of course, we didn't do anything. A lot of editorialists did. The other thing that works for them is that the Bush administration continues its fear-mongering. It continues its fear-mongering, and that works to do that. And it's of a piece with all these stupid alerts, right? All these stupid alerts. Because if, they always say... And there's even something a little racist about this. They hear chatter on the internet. What the hell does that mean? You can just, it's like Americans can just hear this unintelligible Arabic going on. And these guys are so stupid, these terrorists, that they're sending these messages about that they're going to do stuff. I mean, it's preposterous. And even if they did, what good does it do you and me? This is law enforcement material. This is not the, it shouldn't even be at the level of national attention like that. If there are people plotting massive, heinous crimes like occurred on September 11th, the cops ought to be doing something. They ought to be doing what's necessary in order to stop this. But saying to us, be alert, but keep doing what you're doing. You know, keep going to the ball game, but be on the alert. Be on the alert for what? Somebody that is carrying an atomic bomb on their back? Well, all right. So what comes out of this to me, and I hope it does to you, is Bob Dylan had this song, God, almost 40 years ago now that I think of it, called Subterranean Homesick Blues, when one of the lines was, don't follow leaders, watch your parking meters. You know, a lot of good philosophy in rock and roll. And you could go with a lot of different... Oh, I don't know, political theory, but that rock and roll line kind of distills it. The key is when you see a government official with a suit and a flag on his lapel and he tells you something, first thing is don't believe it. I mean, then you, I mean, not, I don't mean to say you always think he's lying. I mean, because even these guys tell the truth once in a while. What that means is you ought to have an immediate critical sense that given how many times politicians have lied to us about little stuff, about, you know, who they're boinking, right? Nobody dies when that happens, just kind of embarrassing. To the lies of George W. Bush when tens of thousands of people lie. But in any regard, if Bill Clinton says, I did not have, what did he say, sex with that woman. You know, my wife looked at me and said, he's lying, right? But it doesn't take a genius that when Dick Cheney or George W. Bush looks at you and says there's weapons of mass destruction, we're going to be hit in the heartland, to know these guys are lying. And it's obligatory because when they lie, people die. Thousands of young men and women don't have any arms or legs now, are never going to be able to digest food naturally again, and on. Hideous wounds they've suffered because of Bush's lies. And we have an obligation to one another and to our nation and to these people who have joined the armed services to not let them be cannon fodder to wars for oil and empire and just insane pathological schemes of power. All right, let's take some of your calls. I'm Peter Werby. This is Night Call, 313-298-WRIF. In about 15 minutes, we'll be giving away passes to the opening of the corporation. I don't think I said it's next Friday. July 23rd, and we'll also have a book for you and a T-shirt. All right, let's take our first call. Hi, it's WRIF. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. It's James calling from Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Well, hi, James.
I attended one of the Alt Fox house parties tonight.
Oh, yeah?
And, I don't watch Fox, and in fact, tonight was the most Fox material I've seen probably in 3 years. Because there's nothing really, no new revelations are in this film, but it's a good distillation of misinformation, I'm starting to...
Well, sure, but the same thing, if you were paying attention, like I know you've emailed me, or like people that look at websites that are available, the stuff in Fahrenheit 9/11 wasn't a revelation either.
Yes, that's a fact.
But it was an enormous revelation to millions of people.
Exactly. That's why this is important to be seen. And it's good to see that Greenwald's previous film, The Uncovered, about 9/11, is going to get theatrical distribution. Because that was initially the distribution was through Move On house parties, just like Out Fox. So there's a possibility that this film will get even more distribution. I've seen The Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the long term, this movie is more important, perhaps, than Fahrenheit.
Sure.
For its long-term ramifications of what's happening in terms of corporate power. It's an amazing film, and everybody out there that has a chance to see it, go see this film. It's it's fantastic.
Yeah, it doesn't have, well, I mean, in many ways, the corporation now is the context in which we live. And so this is a corporate society. Tom Hartman, a good website, tomhartman.com. Tom Hartman also is on the air with a daily syndicated show as well. He says that essentially what fascism is corporatism, is that you have wealth ruling rather than a democratic process ruling.
Right.
And democracy. In fact, I just saw Annie DeFranco last night, she had one of these lines, capitalism shoots down democracy, in one of her songs. That was extraordinarily powerful.
It's good to hear you back on. You were talking about stories that you've missed in the, or that you haven't covered in the past couple of weeks.
Right.
There's one I think that's brewing, which may be the most damaging, and not to get too bent out of shape here, but I think could actually represent a historical turning point. And that is Seymour Hersh from the New Yorker, who broke the Abu Ghraib story, spoke to the ACLU last week. In which he said that there is video of young Iraqi boys being sodomized by U.S. soldiers, and it's on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he's not done reporting this story, and it's suddenly shown. It's been on German television. It's showing up in a number of different places about little kids that the U.S. has taken in as prisoners. Have abused in various ways. Girls have been raped. Boys have been sodomized. Then they've been paraded in front of their parents, who are also being held prisoner, in order to get their parents to talk.
Right. This is available, by the way. I think where I saw it, you go to buzzflash.com, buzzflash.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right, James, let me get a couple more calls before our break. Thanks for joining us from Kenosha, Wisconsin, which means that we are streaming. We're back, so as ZZ Top says, we're bad, we're nationwide, and I guess we're even going across the seas, if I can find this one letter I'm looking for. I'll get you that in a minute from Bertram, listening in Paris, France. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing well.
Yes, Barb from Royal Oak. And
hi, Barb.
I hosted a Move On party tonight.
You did. So you showed the film Outfoxed.
To about 16 people.
Okay.
It's a heck of a movie. It's as you say, it's nothing that we didn't know, but it was really well put together. And there were some people at the party that really weren't as aware as many of us, and it was something to watch their faces as they watched the movie.
Well, that's good, because these films, of course, now with the skill of Michael Moore or Robert Greenwald or the people that did The Corporation, you're getting top-flight directors and producers and filmmakers that can really put this all together.
You kind of hate to be hopeful, because it's the road to disappointment in a lot of ways, but it's good to see all these things. It's good to see the interest. That people have in getting the other side. I think it's becoming so blatant. I don't know why anybody would want to watch Fox News to begin with. It just seems so obvious to me. But the way this movie really spelled out the way that it sucks people in, and the terminology that they use, and it's very careful. I mean, they've done a lot of work at that network on how to get people to listen and to believe. And so it's seeing it spelled out for you. It's you know, all we can do is hope that a lot of people see it and a lot of people saw it, because it's awfully powerful stuff.
Well, what happened? See, one of the things that I'm always concerned about is that people say information is power. And information is necessary, but it's not power. Power is power. And right now, still, this small sector of the American body politic, the far-right-wing conservatives, control all of the government and great sections of the American media. So a lot of times we think, if we're not fooled, and that is true, we've actually made a gain. We've slipped out from under the control of the puppet masters, right?
Right.
And, but then that's only step one. But a lot of people think that's it's 100%. Now I can watch Fox News, or Foxhole News, as I always called it, and think I am free from their media manipulation. Well, you may well be, although you're right. I don't know anybody spends a minute watching it. But there's got to be more, and that's what we haven't worked out yet. They've successfully destroyed all avenues of governance other than the most passive act of all, which is voting. And so if you don't like Bush, you wind up with some guy that doesn't really excite too much doesn't bring too much excitement to the opposition.
Well, you know, one of the things that MoveOn is doing really, really well is I think that they've thought of it. They thought of that same argument, and everything that I've dealt with them so far has come with a follow-up. People that hosted the party tonight, they sent us an email a couple days ago, and it had petitions on there. It had information. They're filing a class action suit against Fox Network for deliberately misleading the public and violating their FCC regulations. There's things that you can do that, you know, the way to hurt the beast, you know, is to go right to the top. And so these are things, you know, and the FCC is obviously extremely biased towards the commercial interests, and that's why Colin Powell's son is the head of the FCC right now, is because they found somebody that would absolutely go along with everything. But if I can kind of go on here, another way that we have power, almost everybody that works for a company gets stock at one point or another,
mm-hmm.
you know, through your thing. You have voting rights. The only thing that these corporations care about is shareholder return and investment. If you have shares in the company, you can go to the board. You can go to the board meetings, and you can talk to them, and you can pass resolutions. And it's almost better than a vote.
Sounds like, God, going to a stockholders meeting. Well, maybe next year.
You know, it's an awful lot of fun. You get them all right in front of you. Everybody that you hate and that you profess to be against, there they are.
I can say. I have in my 201K, is it back up? At least it's a 301K almost by now, right? In my 301K, never mind. Barb, thanks for joining us. Thanks for the report.
Hey, peace.
Appreciate it. Bye now. She said, hey, peace. I stopped for a minute. So she said, hey, Pete. What she's talking about is MoveOn.org and Common Cause sponsored over 3,000 house parties across the United States tonight. And Al Franken, and director of the film Outfoxed, did an interactive online conference call, plus showed this. And this film is driving Rupert Murdoch's people out of their minds because someone's finally telling the truth after 3 or 4 years of nothing but lies. Remember that old John Lennon song, Give Me Some Truth, All I Want Is Some Truth? Yeah. Uncovered director Robert Greenwald, working with a group of Fox monitoring MoveOn members, has put together a documentary film that exposes Fox for what it is, partisan spin, not news. Outfoxed features interviews with 7 ex-Fox News employees who describe how, every day, highly partisan talking points are drawn up to influence newscasts. And the MoveOn.org people say, we'll use this movie to launch a campaign to out Fox News, make sure everyone in the country knows the network is stumping for the Republican agenda. Yeah, sure, true. And then the other film we're talking about, which we're going to be giving away prizes because you guys have figured out how we're going to give them away. No, they haven't. I don't know how we're going to give this stuff away. You know, usually when on a rock station, you get tickets to a concert and they say, I'll take caller 212 or caller number 7 at 313-298-WRIF. But all the lines are on hold. Well, Jay and Dan, we'll talk about it during the break. This just in here from Gary, listening in Windsor. He says, glad to hear you back on the air. The corporation opened here in Canada a few months ago and quickly became the most successful Canadian documentary ever made. Great to see it's getting coverage in the U.S. I hope that Outfoxed plays here. It sure will be equally popular. Well, me too. So we're going to be giving away stuff for the corporation. When we get back, hold on.
This is the Riff Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Hey, it's late night. You're sitting there, and you're thinking about your mortgage. Well, you can go to rockfinancial.com right now. That's right. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go to rockfinancial.com, and there's a lot of reasons to visit. Find out how you can get a $200,000 loan for a lower payment than you would ever think. Also, find out about the Smart Arm. Maybe you're not going to be in your house that long, and you've got to take a look. If you're like most Americans, you might have $7,500 or more in credit card debt. Might be time to use the mortgage and consolidate that debt. No reason to have outstanding bad debt like credit card debt when you can have good debt, low interest, and tax deductible. Use your mortgage. Go to rockfinancial.com right now. You can check out the mortgage calculators. See how much home you can afford if you're thinking about a new purchase. A lot of reasons to go. So go right now, rockfinancial.com. Even though it's late, you go to rockfinancial.com. Anytime, anywhere, evenings or weekends, you can go to rockfinancial.com. Michigan's largest mortgage company, rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, an equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
The voting results are in. In a nationwide taste test, a majority of Budweiser drinkers declares that Miller Genuine Draft has more flavor than Budweiser. And it's cold-filtered smooth. A majority of Bud Light drinkers declares that Miller Lite has more taste than Bud Light. And it's still got half the carbs. But before Miller takes the oath as your president of beers, every single vote must be counted, including the most important vote of all, yours. This weekend, you are cordially invited to take the taste challenge and taste for yourself. It's your choice. Beer versus beer. Democracy versus autocracy. New world or old. Take the taste challenge. But choose wisely. The fate of the beer world hangs in the balance. Vote Miller, the president of beers. Good call. Results obtained from the Institute for Perception, Richmond, Virginia, reflect which beer has more taste or flavor, not preference, carb count, or smoothness. Taste for yourself. Based on a 12-ounce serving, Miller Lite has 3.2 grams of carbs. Bud Light has 6.6 grams of carbs. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
If you or a loved one are addicted to drugs, listen carefully to this message because it will change your life. If each day is a struggle to get off pain medication like Oxycontin, Percocet, and Vicodin, or even heroin or methadone, a revolutionary medical program is only a call away. The Rapid Recovery Institute offers safe and painless detox from all narcotics. Quick return home without withdrawal or cravings. You've seen the news and read the headlines. Addiction doesn't care who you are or what you do. Now there's a safe and painless solution to the horrors of withdrawal and the frustrations of relapse. Their breakthrough, featured on 2020, Dateline NBC, and Fox News, is performed by experienced board-certified physicians and is now available in your area. You never intended to become addicted. Now you can do something about it. Say goodbye to prescription painkillers, heroin, and methadone. Regain control of your life. Call the Institute's confidential toll-free hotline at 888-DETOX-4U. That's 888-DETOX, number 4, letter U. Painless detox and full recovery may only be a phone call away. At 888-338-6948.
More Night Call with Peter Werby next on The Rim.
101 WRIF and Motor City Golf Warehouse present the 6th Annual Arthur Penhallow Golf Classic. It's happening Friday, August 6th at Devil's Ridge Golf Club in Oxford. Join the Grand Poobah himself for an awesome day out on the links. It's a best ball scramble with tons of prizes, great food, and plenty of surprises. It's a day jam-packed full of fun and prizes, including a chance to win a Harley-Davidson with a hole-in-one contest. A portion of the proceeds will benefit Jack's Place for Autistic Children. It only comes once a year, and you don't want to miss it. But don't wait. Reserve your foursome now by calling 248-414-5647. That's 248-414-5647. Or stop by Motor City Golf Warehouse to pick up your registration form and reserve your space before they're all gone. Don't miss out. It's the 6th Annual Arthur Penhallow Golf Classic, Friday, August 6th at Devil's Ridge in Oxford. Sponsored by Motor City Golf Warehouse. In Novi's Main Street District, where lower prices lead to lower scores. Michelob Ultra. Lose the carbs, not the taste. And by Limousine Express. It's your dream. They provide the ride. Call 877-558-8500. From Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
Citizens of Michigan, now that I've fixed California's problems, let me tell you something. I want to help all of the people get a new car. So if you have a job and $199, Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford will terminate your past credit problems.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Then you could be approved at Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. Brand new Kia Rio. Start at just $7,899. That's just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Now, you can tell your past credit problems.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866 866-KIA now.
That's 866-6KIA-NOW.
Qualified buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees. All rebates to dealer.
This is another Riff Rock concert.
Calling all Hellraisers. The American Badass brings it back to Detroit. Are you ready?
Let the world rock this place.
Live. Kid Rock. He's Whiskey Bent. And he's hellbound.
Cowboy, badass, and black.
August 26th, the DTE Energy Music Theater. Kiss Rock. One night only. Tickets are on sale now. Available at the Palace and DTE Energy Music Theater box offices. All Ticketmaster locations. Online at cc.com or palacenet.com. Charge at 248-645-6666. Be sure and pick up Kid Rock's new self-titled CD. If it's gonna be big. Gonna be bad, then it's got to be. Kid Rock.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Well, after a consultation with my producer, Jay Hudson, and our assistant, Dan Letarski, we decided we are going to give away the prize package for the documentary The Corporation, which is opening at the Main Theater in Royal Oak on Friday, July 23rd, this coming week. We're going to do it this way because every phone line coming in here is on hold, and we don't want to blow you all off and then say we'll take caller 19. So unfortunately, the only people, what we're going to do is the next set of callers that call in. So like when we're going to take another caller right now, and then when we're finished with him or her, we'll hang up, and then the person that gets through then, if they want to claim the prize, we'll have two this hour and one next hour at 12:30 Eastern Time. Now, it's a pass to the movie, two passes to the movie, a T-shirt, and the book, The Corporation, that examines the modern institution of this enterprise that now dominates our lives. In fact, some of the movie, the synopsis for the movie says, 150 years ago, the corporation was a relatively insignificant entity. Today, it is a vivid, dramatic, and pervasive presence in all our lives. Like the church, the monarchy, and the Communist Party, and other times and places, the corporation is today's dominant institution. Yeah. You can go to thecorporation.com, by the way, and that'll tell you about it. All right, let's take some more calls. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. Hi, you're on the air.
Evening, Peter.
Hi.
You helped my night at work go by, I'll tell you what.
Glad to do it.
Two things I wanted to mention to you and get your opinion on. The first one I was reading today in the paper, Whoopi Goldberg got let go from Slim Fast.
That's right.
For just speaking out against Bush or making some comments about him. And the thing that really irritates me, I guarantee you, if it was on the other side where she said some negative things about Edwards and Kerry, probably nothing would have happened.
Yeah.
It's like, what about the freedom of speech? You know, you're going to have people, when you sponsor people, are Republic or Democrat, and have to make comments so well. You know what I'm saying? It's
sure.
It's sickening.
I'm going to boycott Slim Fast. I'm through drinking Slim Fast. How about it?
I'm with you.
All right, no more Slim Fest.
The other thing too, I want to get your opinion on is.
Sure.
I keep hearing how these Republicans now are using Ralph Nader as a token and trying to get him on as many ballots as they can, and using him to try to edge out the Democratic vote. And granted, everybody has a right to run for office, but when they're being manipulated, when another party's manipulating that, you know, that's one thing I take a beef with, you know, and I don't like. I just wonder if I can get your opinion on this whole Ralph Nader
stuff. Well, sure, and Nader ought to step down. I mean, that's for sure. The only thing he's going to do in a close race, like last time, is take votes away from the Democratic Party candidate. I mean, there's some that argue. In fact, there's a big argument on the left about this, that the Democrats say that Nader cost Gore the election. The Naderites say, hey, Gore won. It was stolen from him. But still, in Florida, Nader got about 80,000 votes. If Nader hadn't have been in there, we wouldn't even be having these discussions because old George W. would be, you know, running one of his daddy's businesses, probably, you know, the Carlyle Group or something. All right, glad to get you through your work at night, I guess it is. Thanks for joining me at 313-298-WRIF. Here's the letter I was looking for. It's from Paris. Well, it says, "Hi from Paris, France, not Texas." And it's a longer note, but it says, "Just a short mail to applaud the quality of your work. You must be one of the only radio voices who mentions Michael Moore in a supportive voice." Yeah, well, I think you're right. Signed, Bertram. Well, thanks for listening all the way over there in Paris, France. So we know for sure we have people listening in Singapore. We have people listening in little town in Finland. This is pretty incredible. It's great. It's humbling, sort of. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Pete?
Doing well. Thank you.
Hey, I listen to you just about every Sunday.
Thank you.
I had a comment about what you said about Bush being a liar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that he said that they were looking for nuclear arms or whatever, any kind of terrorist weapon. But you forgot to mention the fact that Clinton also lied in front of a grand jury, you know, in front of the whole United States.
No, I'd said
and
that.
Other countries, you know, right on the air. I mean, he was...
About Monica Lewinsky, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what a dork, huh?
I mean, I'm a Republican.
Yeah. You know.
I think Reagan was, one of the greatest presidents ever.
Really? I think he's probably the worst president in American history, although if Bush finishes his term without getting impeached like he should, Bush will be giving him a good run for his money. I mean, here's a guy that had 140 members of his government either convicted, arrested, or investigated, and so bad that when Bush won, went out of office, he had to give peremptory pardons to people in the Reagan and Bush government. They did the Iran-Contra. I mean, the scandals that marked the Reagan administration are just amazing. I mean, how could you think he's the greatest president?
Well, I think, by pulling us out of that recession and not backing down,
he didn't pull
terrorist threat.
He didn't pull us out of any recession.
Well, you can look at Clinton. I mean, what did he do when he bombed that the Navy ship? The terrorists went up beside it and blew a hole in it.
The USS Cole.
Bunch of innocent Americans. I mean, he actually let him know that he was going after them, and sent a bomb 2 days later, to the terrorist front door, and they weren't there. I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a difference between lying about your girlfriend and stupidly doing what Clinton did, and then even more stupidly lying. But essentially, it was a family matter that never should have made it to the public attention. This was manipulated by the press, the media, and the Republicans, who almost stopped government over this and tried to impeach him because of it. But the little mantra on the left is that Clinton lied, nobody died. Bush lied, thousands died.
Well,
that's true. Okay, thank you. Appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hello, Pete. This is Joe in Lincoln Park.
Hi, Joe.
And I wanted to talk about, basically our government style, which seemed to be an aristocracy. We had Prescott Bush, who was our current president's grandfather, and Bush 41's father. And, of course, we have George W. Bush in Florida. And it seems that we're...
No, Jeb Bush. Bush. Yeah.
Jeb Bush. We seem to be caught into a cycle of money and corruption that one George W. Bush tax cut can pay off all of his supporters, rob the future generations and bankrupt them. And in the meantime, the middle class and the people that are poor aren't being helped at all.
Yeah, I wonder, like that last caller, I don't know if I got that out of my mouth. I think I might have just sort of sub-mouthed it or something. I was going to say, are you rich? I mean, when somebody says they're a Republican, because that's who's done well. Here, this is the lead story on a lot of the news outlets. This is from the New York Times today. Actually, you don't even have to read the article. It's all in the headline. Hourly pay in U.S. not keeping pace with price rises. So it's the first sentence is, the amount of money workers receive in their paychecks is failing to keep up with inflation. Though wages should recover if businesses continue to hire, 3 years of job losses have left a large worker surplus. So when you have this large surplus, there's no pressure for wages to rise. And let's see, in June, production workers took home $525 a week on average after accounting for inflation. This is about $8 less than they were pocketing last January and the lowest level of weekly pay since October 2001. So this is really a case. The old slogan, like from the early part of the 20th century, was the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Well, what you have now is the rich getting richer and richer and richer, being enriched purposely as social policy and political agenda by the far right wing led by Bushko, to the detriment of the vast majority of middle class and working class people. I mean, the poor are getting screwed so badly, we take that now for granted.
Well, there's no question that the Bush tax cut is going to hurt future generations, namely me and my children, if I ever have any.
Sure. How old are you, if I may ask?
30.
30. Yeah, well, yeah, you'll be paying a lot of it, and your kids will be paying it, and probably your grandkids will as well. But, these characters running things, they think in terms of the next election and the next quarterly report by the corporations that who they represent. They don't represent the American people.
Also, no, they don't. Actually, I think quite a few of them are out of our mind. Like our current president, he seems to be a theocratic leader. You know, he's against science and progress. We can't get stem cell research in this country because we have a president that's living in the dark ages, and he thinks the world is flat. I mean, if we didn't have, space, he would probably think the world is flat.
Well, it's worse than that. I don't know if you heard me earlier, but I was quoting from this visit that he made to this Amish community where he said, God speaks through me.
That is very interesting. Most of the people who did that, I believe, historically were burned at the stake or considered insane.
Yeah, well, we don't want to burn to the stake, and I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to know what this man actually believes.
Well,
I think this. I mean, he's a very, very dull-witted guy who the only reason he ever got anywhere was because of his dad's friends. He never had to face the consequences of any failure or loss, whether it was DUIs or cocaine use or bad grades or failed businesses. And the same thing now. I mean, he's expecting. Here's Iraq littered with American and Iraqi dead because of his lies, and he just thinks he's going to get reelected president of the United States. I shouldn't even say reelected.
And, I mean, there is some proof to suggest that he doesn't have much going on upstairs. He has historically the fewest press conferences of, I believe, any president in 70 years. And Helen Thomas, who I believe has covered probably nearly one-fifth of the nation's presidents, the White House correspondent Helen Thomas, called him the worst president ever. And I think she would know.
Yeah. And well, I think it's going to be a big toss-up, which was the worst and most corrupt presidency in American history, the Reagan administration or the Bush administration. Hopefully, it'll remain the Reagan administration in terms that he had two terms to go at it. Well, thank you very much, Joe.
Bye.
Appreciate it. Here's a couple letters, and this is, I don't know, not bad language, a little disgusting. I'm going to read it just to give you an idea of the mindset of the person that sent it to me. And it's sent, I won't give his last name, Specialist First Class Michael, who, well, I won't tell you the unit he's with, but this is interesting. So he says, without even showing you the respect of addressing you properly, I would like to inform you that you are a twisted, pathetic, and vile excuse for a human being. He's talking about me. He's writing to me. Listens to the show. I did not entertain clicking any of your useless links on my website. I guess he went to my website. I'm too busy serving my country with honesty, loyalty, and integrity. You are... Listen, now, this is a little offensive. My apologies in advance, but this will give you an idea of the psychology of this character. You are no more useful to anyone than the 16-inch log of excrement I laid to rest in my toilet this morning. I, too, was impressed. Maybe my bowels were reacting to liberals conversing in the background on CNN. Back to your links. I only had to read the title of them to realize who you are and what your agenda is. And then, I mean, it's on endlessly. God, you make me want to vomit, you mindless, shallow little bastard. You are the enemy. How can you live with yourself? Specialist Michael, and then it's psychological operations. This is the Abu Ghraib people. That's who this guy's involved. I'm not saying he was over there, but those are the kind of units. And these are the kind of twisted personalities. You know what I say? Politically fascist, personality bully. And here's a couple more. Let me see. I thought I had two more. But this is from Aaron, lives in Arlington, Virginia. He said, I'd like to say thanks for being both an entertaining and intelligent voice in the media during a time when we don't have enough critical thinkers. As a former Michigander and one still at heart, I listened to you on WRIF while I was in high school, and thanks to the Internet, I'm able to occasionally listen to you when he was at West Point and then later while stationed in other areas of the country. As an Army veteran who's likely to be called up to this backdoor draft they're calling an involuntary recall, I try to stay keenly aware of what's going on in the Pentagon. The reason I'm writing is to make sure you and your listeners are aware that a large percentage of U.S. soldiers are not the ignorant, close-minded followers that sometimes the far left or far right, for that matter, makes us out to be. Only now that Bush has been definitively proven to be a deceitful con man, though, have some soldiers been able to come out of the political closet that a false sense of patriotism from the right as well has forced them into. While it's true that there are many of these individuals in uniform, as the military is, in theory, a cross-section of our society, I think you'll find that almost all the problems we've had in Iraq stem from a trickle-down effect of arrogance and hypocrisy that this administration and their hand-picked military leaders have all forced upon us. I find it ironic that most former prominent military leaders urge caution and patience before the Iraq invasion, yet their warnings obviously fell upon deaf ears. Now that we're in the middle of this quagmire and know for certain that Bush's reasoning for this war has proven to be completely unfounded, Bush and his friends in power still refuse to admit that our military is undermanned for what is obviously a much more difficult occupation than they expected. Another irony I think most of your listeners will find surprising is that of the veterans serving in Congress, there are many more Democrats than Republicans, and of those Republicans that have served in uniform, most are much more moderate than their chicken hawk peers. Clearly, Bush and Cheney are men that are willing to fight for any cause without understanding the ramifications, so long as they or their corporate backers don't have to be in the trenches. That's from Aaron, listening in Arlington, Virginia, who is an Army vet. And there was one more, too, from a vet, but I think what we'll do is take a break. Now, remember, or have we got our two winners? We got one winner? All right. No, we have both our winners for this hour. We're giving away passes, T-shirts, and the book that the corporation, a film by Mark Akbar and Jennifer Abbott and Joel Bakken, are doing. And it's going to start at the main theater July 23rd, this coming Friday. We'll have one more set of prizes in about a half an hour, so stay tuned.
Nightcall. 101 WRIF Detroit presents Nightcall, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Nightcall, Peter Werby.
Uh-oh. Well, here's what I did, folks. I put our open in there. How could I be so dumb? Let me see. Okay. We got about 35 seconds, and then we will get into the commercials that do things like pay my salary. I'll tell you officially, we're WRIF in Detroit. My producer, Jay Hudson, says, Peter, we've got a music bed. What's going on? Producers get all excited. Whereas the hosts, we say, hey, what the hell? All right. Give me about 10 seconds more of this. We'll get to our commercials and right back to our phones at 313-298-WRIF. You can email me, too, at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All right, here come the bill payers.
No matter how you count it, or store it, you still know how to save it.
It's cash. And when you buy your car from Red Holman Pontiac GMC truck, you'll get to keep more of it than with any other dealer. It's lease pull-ahead time July 7th through August 2nd. If your lease expires from now until March 31st, 2005, GMAC will waive all remaining payments upon purchase or lease of a new GM vehicle. Get up to $5,000 in rebates on select Pontiac and GMC trucks. Right now, Red Holman has over 300 Grand Ams, 240 Grand Prix, 150 GMC Envoys in stock and ready to roll. There are 1,500 total new units available located on over 13 acres. A fantastic new lease rate is available for July, lowering lease payments and waiving security deposits on all Envoys. Red Holman has no finance and insurance salespeople. They don't charge dock fees. Red Holman hasn't charged dock fees for 47 years. Never have, never will. Just trust, fairness, and commitment. Lease pull-aheads going on now at Red Holman Pontiac GMC truck on Ford Road, 2 miles east of I-275 at the Ford Road exit, or visit redholman.com.
101 WRIF and Motor City Golf Warehouse present the 6th Annual Arthur Penhallow Golf Classic. It's happening Friday, August 6th at Devil's Ridge Golf Club in Oxford. Join the Grand Poobah himself for an awesome day out on the links. It's a best ball scramble with tons of prizes, great food, and plenty of surprises. It's a day jam-packed full of fun and prizes, including a chance to win a Harley-Davidson with their hole-in-one contest. A portion of the proceeds will benefit Jack's Place for Autistic Children. It only comes once a year, and you don't want to miss it. But don't wait. Reserve your foursome now by calling 248-414-5647. That's 248-414-5647. Or stop by Motor City Golf Warehouse to pick up your registration form and reserve your space before they're all gone. Don't miss out. It's the 6th Annual Arthur Penhallow Golf Classic, Friday, August 6th at Devil's Ridge in Oxford. Sponsored by Motor City Golf Warehouse. In Novi's Main Street District, where lower prices lead to lower scores. Michelob Ultra. Lose the carbs, not the taste. And by Limousine Express. It's your dream. They provide the ride. Call 877-558-8500. From Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
Citizens of Michigan, now that I've fixed California's problems, let me tell you something. I want to help all of the people get a new car. So if you have a job and $199, Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford will terminate your past credit problems.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Then you could be approved at Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. Brand new Kia Rio. Started just $7,899. That's just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Now, you can tell your past credit problems.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866-6-KIA now. That's 866-6-KIA-NOW.
Qualified buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees. All rebates to dealer.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Attention car buyers, July is inventory reduction month at Parkway Chrysler Jeep. They have 1,000 vehicle inventory and only have room for 400. So 600 gotta go. So here's how they're gonna do it. Town and Country Stow and Go minivans for $189 a month. Jeep Liberty 4x4s, $109 a month. Grand Cherokee 4x4s, just $169 a month. And Sebring sedans for just $96 a month. Parkway has rebates up to $7,000. Employee pricing for everyone. Lease loyalty. And Parkway will get you out of your old lease and into a new one for free. Parkway will give you an additional $2,500 for your trade-in. That's right, the appraised value plus $2,500. Plus, no offer will be refused, so do not wait to take advantage of the great selection of new cars for under $200 a month. Parkway has to sell 600 cars, so they will beat any deal. This sale ends on July 30th, so hurry up to Parkway Chrysler Jeep on Gratiot at 16 and a half mile in Clinton Township, where you just show up, sign up, and ride.
Check your local paper for details.
Kids, eat your vegetables.
Why?
Because they have vitamins that are good for you. Kids, go outside and play.
Why?
Because fresh air is good for you.
Parents are always telling kids why something's good for them.
Kids, time for bed.
Why?
Because sleeping is good for you.
So don't be surprised when they start telling you.
Mom, don't smoke anymore.
Why?
Because it's not good for us.
Protect your children from secondhand smoke. If you or someone you know smokes, ask them to take it outside. Secondhand smoke can cause bronchitis, pneumonia, ear infections, and asthma in children. So if you're a smoker, don't smoke around people you love. Better yet, quit. Just call 1-800-537-5666 for more information. That's 1-800-537-5666. A message from the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Next time we have open spot, another prize package for the movie The Corporation opening at the main theater Friday, July 23rd. And at 1 a.m., I'll be doing an interview with Jennifer Abbott, who is the co-director of The Corporation. Actually, her other, the other director, Mark Akbar, did, I won't go too much into this, but many of you may remember the film he did called Manufacturing Consent, Noam Chomsky in the Media, which is pretty incredible. In fact, you know, I've got some DVDs of that. I think I'll give that away next week. You know, it's like, I'm used to doing that on rock stations. You always have these giveaways. Just one quick thing, and then we'll get back to our phones at 313-298-WRIF. And that is, I forgot, of the other things that we're missing during, that we missed talking about during the 2 weeks that I've been off, is that this hideous attempt to alter the Constitution to fit the prejudicial and discriminatory homophobic views of the right wing went down to crashing defeat, 48-50. These Republicans, imagine this, all the things that are wrong with this country, all the things that we need, everything that's happening here. I was just talking to a cop in my suburb, and I asked him about whether something could be accomplished, and he says, well, you know, we've been laying off people, and what you're suggesting, they probably don't have any finances for. And I'm thinking, wow, they got jillions of dollars for Bush's buddies to destroy Iraq and then rebuild it, but nothing for our schools and our roads and what have you. So so there's no real legislative accomplishments of the Bushco regime, and so they use everything either for a photo op or they use everything for political reasons. So they thought, well, we know we can't get this amendment about gay marriage through the Senate, right? But if we put it up there, that'll energize our base. You know, these prejudicial people that they see as their base, and which probably aren't as prejudicial as they think. Now, I went to a party. There's a new couple moved in on our block, two guys, and they just renovated this house. I had seen it before, and I've seen it subsequently because I was at a party at their house last night, and it was absolutely incredible what they did to it. I mean, this is one of the best things that could have happened to our neighborhood. Anyways, I was there, and they invited quite a number of their gay friends, and also all the neighbors. So there we were, all these gay men, and all of these heterosexual couples, some of them in their mid-70s. And then the neighbors, the bedrock, the old neighbors from that have been there. I've been here for 45 years and what have you. And we're just all there, drinking drinks and eating little snacks. And I don't know, if you would have asked the older heterosexual couples, the man and the wife that have been married for 50 years, and if you'd say to them, do you support gay marriage, they probably would have said, no, I don't. I mean, that's kind of standard. Nobody likes to, at least, I mean, I do. I support gay marriage 100%. I mean, why shouldn't people be able to do what the hell they want in that regard? When it comes to love and the desire to commit oneself publicly and through the institution of the state and perhaps religion to a lifetime of love and partnership. Yeah? Couldn't be any worse than heterosexuals. Don't about half of those end in divorce. Anyway, so we were just all there, one happy community, and people's sexuality didn't mean a damn thing, and why should it? It's just when it's raised purposely and manipulatively, instrumentally, to the level of a political issue by these creepy homophobic, they're not even homophobic. You know that? They don't even care. It's all about power. Whatever they can manipulate. But I'll tell you, we've gone quite a ways, because even these far right wing senators, everyone says, well, I think people have the right to live the way they want, which maybe 20 years ago they would say, this is sin against nature and all that, or sin against God, against the laws of nature and what have you. But in any event, it really struck me how absolutely insignificant it was. And you know, it's like a generation ago, how seemingly indelible and important race was, that these marked it's separate cultures and what have you. And now, I mean, this, of course, every one of these things is always opposed by the conservatives. And now, increasingly, that means less and less. That that it's not unusual, on the major media or in our lives to see people mixed by race. That was used to be one of the epithets white racists had called people that wanted integration. You race mixers, you. And now we're going to have sexual preference mixers. And as a longtime married man in there with these other long-term married heterosexual couples, how in the world would two guys or two women getting hitched in any way threaten, undermine, erode, corrupt, or whatever the hallowed institution of marriage? Nah, I don't think so, right? Not a bit. And these guys can't come up with a single answer. They just they just say these things, and what they're doing is manipulating the fears and sometimes religious beliefs of people that they hope will come out and vote for them. And in some ways, that's even more vile than actually believing that. Well, your opinion on that or anything else. By the way, if you're on the line waiting and you were going to comment on something else, please feel free to do that as well. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. This is the Night Call Show. And we're going to get... we're going to do that. Our next free line, we will be giving away our passes and the rest of our prize package for the movie The Corporation. Okay, let's see. I have it written down. Thank you, Dan. It's line 4. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
General Tommy Frank over a year ago said if we had another attack, another terrorist attack, we'd have to throw out the Constitution. Tom Ridge less than a week ago said if we have another terrorist attack, we'll have to postpone the election.
Right.
And I read in the newspaper where a columnist, an MSU law professor, says it's entirely legal. Congress can set the date. The Republicans control Congress.
Somebody...
This really makes me angry because I was raised by a military man,
mm-hmm.
21 years of service, dating from before Korea to Vietnam, and a bunch of tiny minor wars that nobody ever heard of. His first vote ever cast was in 1972 because as a military man,
mm-hmm.
he felt he had given up his right to vote because he had read in the Constitution in basic training that the military is subservient to the civilian president.
Really? Well,
and
hey, let me just do one teeny correction on General Tommy Frank's remark. It was in Cigar Aficionado, and he said...
Oh, there's a high-ranking political magazine.
Well, they've had everybody from Rush Limbaugh to Fidel Castro in that. All you got to do is smoke a stogie, and I guess they put you on the cover if you're at least... a little bit prominent. But here's what he said. I mean, you summarized it, but he said if there was another major terrorist attack in this country, it could end our experiment with democracy. And I thought the noun there, the use of the noun experiment, was pretty telling.
Yeah, because that's what it is to them. It's simply an experiment. It's not what should be.
Well,
it's some ethereal theory off in the wilderness that they'll use to pull down and say, hey.
Well, perhaps, as I was saying earlier, the Democratic Party is not the opposition party, but rather just another party, that they're not fearful of having organized resistance because, did you see the Michael Moore film?
Yeah, I did. What Hunter S. Thompson called an ideological albatross around the neck of the American people.
Well, in any event, at the beginning, it shows no Democratic senator willing to challenge the results of the election, even though every one of them knew the election was stolen, that it was totally rigged. An opposition party, if there was one worthy of its name, would have called nationwide demonstrations. In Europe, they would have called a general strike if an election was being stolen in the manner that the 2000 contest was. But there's the feeling, and I hope that they're not correct, by Bushko and the right wing, that they can do virtually anything. They can say anything, and even if it turns out to be catastrophically wrong, You would think that common decency would dictate that everyone in Bush Co. would resign after they say, well, huh, I guess we made a mistake. There were no weapons of mass destruction, and there was no connection between Saddam and Al-Qaeda. Even our people say that. Even the Republicans say that. In fact, following the release of the findings by that year-long inquiry by the Senate Intelligence Committee, the Republican chairman said Congress might not have approved the Iraq war had lawmakers known the truth. Well, I say that George W. Bush and the rest of them purposely lied. All right, that's my view on things. We know at least they were catastrophically wrong. So shouldn't they all resign in disgrace? Can you have this mountain of bodies of Iraqis and Americans dead and horrendously wounded? I went to see Fahrenheit 9-1-1, and there was any number of times I had to avert my eyes. I could not look at the scenes of what George W. Bush has caused on screen by his mistakes at best and his lies at worst. Why doesn't he resign instead of demanding another term? Wow. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. It's Night Call. You're on the air. Hi.
Werby.
It's Werby. Yeah. Hi.
Man, are you insane or what?
No. Well, a little. Why do you think that?
It seems like you hate living in the United States. Why are you here if you hate the United States so much?
But you, how do you associate this political administration with the country? Are you insane?
I think you are.
Well, I think you are.
You're against everything and everybody. No.
I'm not against everything at all. You're not listening very good. Is this the first time you've heard the show?
No, I've listened to you many times.
Okay. So now I'm against this far right-wing coup of our government. That there are certain traditions that were established a long time ago, and I oppose the Bush administration. So how does this get to be hating the country? Do you associate a particular political administration with the country itself?
You have to be insane. Ronald Reagan is the worst president we ever had.
The absolute worst president.
So you're saying that Bill Clinton was a good president?
When did you hear me say that?
Well, you said that Ronald Reagan was the worst.
Yeah, right. Well, there's been other presidents, you know. I never mentioned anything about Bill Clinton. I said he lied and he was stupid for lying. Are you insane?
I think you are.
Do you think I am? Well, give me some more proofs. I'm interested. I mean, I may be. Maybe, you know, I'm always keen to get a view of others, because one of the worst crimes any of us can commit is self-delusion. Would you admit that?
Well, I think you are just completely against America.
Well, you've said that once before, but what we need is not just contentions, but supportive information or supportive evidence. What makes you think I'm against?
I think you're against all of the people that are losing their lives overseas.
Well, you keep making these contentions. I'm asking you to supply me with the evidence of this. What in what I've said makes you think that I'm against the people that are losing their lives? When I just said this was horrid.
Oh, no, it wasn't. You, it was Michael Moore, who you liked his movie, but I hope that we lose the war. Hope we lose the war, you know.
Now who said that? Did you heard me say, or Michael Moore say, I hope we lose the war?
I hope that our soldiers die.
Who said that now, me or Michael Moore?
I think it's Michael Moore, but I think you agree with that. I think that you're right along with that.
Well, you got too many I thinks in there. Have you seen the movie?
I'm not about to.
Well, how do you know what is said in there? Where did you see that reported anywhere that Michael Moore? I mean, you don't have to see everything. I didn't go see The Passion of the Christ. I mean, I read about it, but so you may have just read about it, and I'm sure you don't want your fundamental beliefs challenged in any way. So where did you read or hear that Michael Moore said that in his film?
I don't even get how you are on.
Wait. Come on. You're having trouble focusing. You just said Michael Moore says that he hopes soldiers die and that I agree. So, I mean, I'm wondering where you heard that or where you read that.
I wonder how you are on WRIF.
Hey, did you, you know, listen, man, you can admit this to me. Now, I'm pretty ADD. Now, did you ever get diagnosed as being ADD? Huh?
Say what?
You know what ADD is?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you ever get diagnosed as a?
No, I got diagnosed as being a drunk before, but.
Are you drunk now?
No.
Okay.
Now, but,
wait, let me just tell you before this is getting a little crazy. Michael Moore has said nothing like that, and it's an irresponsible charge on your part to say anything like that. Michael Moore, like every American, has extraordinary sympathy for everyone who has suffered because of Bush in Iraq. Americans, of course, probably come to our mind first, but most people care also about the thousands of Iraqi civilians that died unnecessarily because of Bush's lies. So if you've heard, or, and I'm sure you've not even read that somehow you're just making this up as you go along, that Michael Moore has said nothing like that whatsoever. In fact, this movie is a box office success at Army bases around the country. Soldiers and families of the military are flooding in to see this film. How do I know this? That far left wing journal, the Wall Street Journal, has an article about it. All right, gotta go. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Are you insane? I'm sorry.
Hi, Peter, after hearing that call, I think of the old biblical passage, darkness covers the earth and gross darkness the people.
Are you insane?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go
Peter,
ahead.
What I want to talk about a little bit is that, you know, the level of corporate fascism, and that's what we should call it, that I hear daily on, like, what you would call mainstream AM radio. It is just incredible. The leading morning show in Detroit on the biggest station in this part of the country, the host, his initials start with PW, that's all I'll say, because I don't want to plug him too much. But every Tuesday, he has a guy named David Littman on the show, who is like some kind of big shot with Comerica Bank, and he gives his views on the economy. And, of course, their views totally of, you know, worship the free market, Ronald Reagan, you know, the whole bit. You know,
mm-hmm.
But he actually said this. Tell me if this is not corporate fascism. It's extreme. He blamed all of Detroit's problems, okay, economic problems, on what he calls living wage laws.
Wow.
He says the employers are forced to pay $7 and $8 an hour for work that is worth more than about $3 an hour to them.
Well,
one more thing. He also said that anyone who didn't support Reaganomics were nitwits or socialists. And the host, PW, he just says, he just, like, rubber stamps and agrees with everything this guy says.
What?
If it goes unchallenged, that's what bothers me.
PW. Give me the first name.
Paul.
Oh,
w.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I mean, this guy he just licks the boots of any corporate person that, you know. But
well,
this is embarrassing.
It's not only corporatism. I mean, that's almost feudalism. That see, that's one of the things that the conservatives always chatter about, and that is the market ought to dictate price. And what they want is the market to dictate our labor. And one of the things that labor, and that's the way it used to be in the 19th century and into the 20th century, labor unions began a long 100-year struggle, 150-year struggle, which they won for a while, now we're going back in the other direction, to artificially raise the price of labor. So we're commodities on the market when we go out there and we sell our labor. Well, if we're going to depend on the market, there's a lot of us. So we could all be working for $3 an hour. But what happens is countries pass minimum wage laws, and the one we have in the United States at $5.50 or something like that is absolutely disgraceful. Other countries in Europe, it's $10, $12 an hour. So it's artificially raised so we don't let these bosses pay us the market wage. Because if they paid us the market wage, we'd all be living in Guatemala like people do in Guatemala. Or people do in China or Indonesia or Honduras, where the market rules. But, of course, they don't like the real market because the real market wouldn't have the kind of multi-trillion dollar subsidies that are paid to manufacturers and growers and on endlessly. I mean, our tax money, the average middle class and working class person, pays back through our taxes to corporate interests an enormous amount of money for their activities, and then, of course, they scoot out of paying full taxes. So they like the free market when it comes to our wages, but when it comes to, for instance, the United States invading a sovereign country, seizing the oil assets, changing the laws, which in Iraq previously forbid foreign countries from investing and taking out profits. Paul Bremer, who was the dictator, was the dictator that followed the dictator Saddam, declared that law is no more. So now, when everything gets settled, they're going to be able to bring in the American companies, and they're going to be able to extract oil and hence oil dollars, profits. So we'll have paid for this all. This is all this money for this war will have all gone to Bush's family's businesses that make the war machine, and then the Bush's family friends that rebuild it all and profit. So it is this enormous racket, and the average Joe and Jane are paying for it. And now, because of the way the Bushco has driven us into debt, as in we're now a debtor nation, our kids and grandkids are going to be paying this back, because we got to pay interest, just like we're, like individuals maxed out on credit cards. We're now maxed out on debt, and a good portion of our taxes are going to go for debt service. But hey, what does it mean? It just means that Bush's pals get richer and richer, where the middle class and the working class gets nowhere. Cute. And what do we do? What do we do about it? We say, what about gay marriage? Well, suckers. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete. What's going on, man?
Hey, just doing this talk show.
Yeah. How that caller you had 2 callers ago, that was just a great example of people who like to run their mouth without even researching what they're talking about.
Well, researching, that takes a little bit of sophistication. We're talking about someone that didn't even know diddly squat.
Hey, if he just don't answer the vulgarity, he'd be on the same line as that email you got.
Yeah, right.
I'm in a little bit of a quandary here. I'm a non-partyist. I vote with who I feel is going to be the best for the office. But the problem I have is we know Bush is a liar. We know he's put us in a war. He's said, I'm a veteran of the United States Army and father of 2 children, working class guy. I don't live beyond my means, and quite frankly, with today's economy, I don't have much of a means to live beyond. But we got Bush, who we know what he's done. It's been put out there point blank. But on the other hand, we have Kerry, and don't have much faith at all in him either.
Well, I think that's the real mistake the Kerry machine is making. I think their strategy is to let Bush fall of his own weight, and rather than really becoming an opposition party, really enunciating strongly what he's going to do differently, he just makes these kind of broad platitudes about he's going to be the president of all the people, and once in a while will make a little bit of a critical remark. But he's almost allowing the media and films like Michael Moore's film to do the argumentation for him, because they're fearful if he really takes strong positions that he'll offend people. Well, I think what he's more in danger of losing votes from people like yourself. Because, wait a minute, if one guy's a liar and another guy is sort of not even there, we might as well stick with a known quantity.
Well, one of the problems I have with Kerry, beyond what you're saying there, is, you've got the points where he's talking about the environment. He's driving around Detroit in a Suburban that, they question him about it. He says, I don't own a Suburban. Well, no, it's one of his family members do, and he's sure sporting around in it. It's things like that on top of it. I don't see a candidate who I actually see as a viable person for our president.
Well, it's unfortunate. I mean, it really is. Like, a lot of my friends are debating whether to vote for Kerry or vote for Nader, and Nader at least is forthright. You know what he stands for. He wants to limit the power of corporations. He strongly supports rolling back the damage that Bush has done to the environment, and on and on. It's really a matter of. And people say they don't like to choose between the lesser of the two evils. Well, nobody does, but one evil, I guess it's better to have a lesser evil than a more, how would you say that, than a greater evil, I guess is the word.
Yeah. You look at them, and you got both guys, they went to Princeton, I believe they both did. Neither one of them accurately represent the American public? They both have the silver spoons. You got one is married to the Heinz heiress. They have a good quantity of financial freedom there. Then we have the other one who's he's a known billionaire,
mm-hmm.
you know, that his daddy's made all this money for him, you know.
I don't think it's impossible, for instance, for people to have a lot of money and to have a conscience and an understanding of people that aren't in the same social class than him. I mean, maybe the best example are these extraordinarily wealthy entertainment stars, the rock stars and the Bruce Springsteens or the Bon Jovis or the Barbara Streisands or the people like that. I mean, you would think that they would be the big bushbackers, right? They're the ones that benefited extraordinarily from Bush's tax cut. But they have a lot of money and they have a conscience. Robert Redford, I mean, actually, in terms of naming liberal rock stars and people in other... in rock stars and movie stars, you'd do better to name the conservative ones, because that you could probably do that in about 2 minutes, where it would take you an hour to name everybody else.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though? So,
oh, yeah.
Listen, I don't. You know, people always assume that everybody in media, including people like myself, make just a jillion amount of dollars. I mean, I have no qualms. I mean, at some point, I'd probably even be willing to say exactly. Right now, I feel comfortable to say that I make essentially a lower middle class income. And that's fine. I live in an upper working class, lower middle class suburb. And, but I am in an industry where probably if I would have been more ambitious, I could have made a lot of money. So if I was a millionaire or a multimillionaire, somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who signed a contract for $333 billion, if I made $333 billion for doing talk radio, I wouldn't move too far from where I am. I don't want to live I know rich people and they're nice people and all that, but I don't want to live in areas like that. I want to live right along the Woodward Corridor, you know, with the Ferndale and Royal Oak and what have you. That's my hood, and that's where, or so I can get quickly downtown. That's where I hang. But if I had millions of dollars, I'd be giving it away to environmental groups and political groups and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, the main reason I'd love to have a lot of money is to fund the groups that are doing decent things in the world.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
All right.
I think the big thing for me is the one thing that's going to push me towards Kerry is that he now has Edwards.
Yeah.
I see him more as the working class kind of guy.
Let me tell you that it's not just the guy. Here, I was going to read this stuff. I don't think I have time for it, though. But here's just one. This is an article from the Denver Post. It says more than 100 high-level officials under Bush who helped govern industries they once represented as lobbyists, lawyers, or company advocates. Now, what this is, I'm left out part of the sentence. But there's 100 high-level officials who were once lobbyists, lawyers, or company advocates who are now put in regulatory positions by the Bush administration. So you have these people that once were lobbyists that are now like an administrator in the Food and Drug Administration, or in the that are the guy, like, for instance, that supervises mining, and that, you know, mining does an extraordinary amount of damage to the environment. Well, the guy that's head of that sector, I don't have this in front of me, but the guy that's head of that sector was once the head of the Mining Association. So that's the kind of stealth stuff that we don't even talk about. We talk about Iraq, we talk about the economy, and that's about it. But these guys have undermined all the progressive legislation and regulations that have occurred over the last 100 years from both Republican and Democratic presidents. They are a far right-wing radical departure from anything that's ever occurred here, even from Reagan to a large extent.
You know, the sad thing is it's not surprising.
No? Oh, okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Although I kind of missed that. All right. This might be a good time to take a break. Right back to get your calls. We got our winners. We do. All right. So we have all three of our winners for the prize pack for the Corporation. Starts this Friday at the main theater. The Corporation is the name of the documentary. I've been checking it out, and I think you'll enjoy it.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Hey, it's Mike Walters from The Morning Show, and I'm as excited as you are that summer is officially here. Summer, of course, means hot weather, but extreme temperatures can really affect your car's transmission, and you certainly don't need a breakdown in the middle of a summer road trip or when you're rolling around town with your buds. So if you're hearing any grinding, feeling slipping, seeing fluid, or think you might have a transmission problem, visit one of AAMCO's four locations in the Detroit area. Call 1-800-GO-AAMCO, that's A-A-M-C-O, for the center nearest you. Tell them I sent you for a free diagnostic check at participating centers. Just call for an appointment. AAMCO technicians are the best in the field. They're trained and certified in advanced transmission diagnosis, repair, and maintenance. So taking your car to AAMCO is like having vacation insurance. And with the skyrocketing gas prices, a better running car means better gas mileage. For a job done right, guaranteed, at a price that's right, AAMCO, AAMCO.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist, whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
This is WRIM.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Gene Simmons of KISS, and of course we had to ask about Peter and our dear friend Ace.
They're both sweethearts. Hopefully they're taking care of their health, which is more important than being on tour in a rock band.
Well, there's just so many comical aspects to him also. Just the business of him, that he likes to take things apart, but he rarely puts them back together again. And
kind of puts it back together. I've given him a few cell phones. You know, if they didn't, they had a click or something.
Yeah,
let me fix it. He tears them apart. I'm going, oh, that's what the inside looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay, can I have it back? It's not working.
Not a chance. Not a chance. There's no way that cell phone's going back together again.
You don't let him do that in your studio, do you?
I stopped letting him do lots of stuff.
Mike the Morning broadcast program on the Riff.
101.101.
Riff.
Twice is nice. Two-Hooper Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Two-Hooper Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Two-Hooper Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff Prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Two-Hooper Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
It really rocks.
Now, again, transmission.
Here comes the music.
Riff.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Mike tried to get through a review of some art house flick, House of Sand and Fog. Yeah, there's a big budget thriller. Anyway, the Peanut Gallery had a pretty short attention span for this one.
Her dad had this house. She ended up getting the house, and she never opened her mail. And eventually the city took the house from her. She's trying to get the house
boring.
Back. And basically these foreigners moved in and they built a porch higher up so that you could see the water in the distance, and they called it a water view to double their money.
Boring.
And that movie was playing in the theater flooded with old Milwaukee, and strippers were drowning in it. I wouldn't step foot inside. Seriously, my wife wouldn't
need
a roll of duct tape and a wheelbarrow to get me to that one.
There's that vicious suicide in the end. I think it's like the Comcast On Demand or something.
If you superglued my genitalia to a cannonball and fired it through the front door of this theater, you couldn't get me to see a second of that.
I would rather wear a Sally Jesse Raphael panties like a ski mask.
A couple of weeks ago, she, what was the name of her book? Oh, Bush Women, about the women in the Bush administration. And she has a new book out, and I've interviewed her about it, and we'll be hearing that at 1:30. It's called The W Effect, Bush's War on Women. So we'll be getting that at 1:30. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Going well.
I was wondering, I didn't catch in that last caller, that did you say who you're going to vote for? Did you happen to mention that?
No.
Okay, do you know, you don't know who you're going to vote for at this point?
Well, do you think I'm going to vote for Bush?
No, because I'm just asking you. I mean, my situation, the way I'm thinking is I'm going to vote for either George Bush or Ralph Nader. I'm not going to vote for John Kerry.
You know, maybe what Nader says is correct. Nader says he'll take more votes from Bush than he will from Kerry.
Well, I really do believe that this election is about world views when it comes down to it, and you got to have, there's got to be drastic change one way or the other. And I say that you know, George Bush is really aggressive, and that he's going to bring a definite different world force in the next 4 years, as will Ralph Nader. So what's the world I envision? Well, it's Ralph Nader. So I'm thinking about rooting for Ralph Nader here, but I don't know. I just
Vote for Nader.
You think I should vote for Nader?
Yeah, but what the hell does my opinion mean?
Yeah, I know. I just
well, go. What you ought to do is look at Nader. Must have a website, I'm sure. Probably Nader.com, or just put in Ralph Nader into a search engine, and you'll get it. Yeah, I mean, Ralph Nader is a man of high integrity, and his stand on issues is really good.
Okay, and also, do you have a good book to read about the budget deficit or anything like that? Would you recommend a book that that explains it a little bit better, the problem that we're facing?
Let me see real quickly here. Okay, I'm going to my website. I'm going to books. What is on here? Something about the economy. I don't know. Well, let's do this. I can't think of one off the top of my head, and I'm looking at so many different books here, that one specifically about the economy. There's a man named either Paul Krugman or Krugman, K-R-U-G-M-A-N. I always hear
the New York Times.
Yeah. He has a collection of essays.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably the best I can suggest. If anybody's on hold and wants to shout out a few, they can do that, or they can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All right?
Okay, well, great. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Bye now. I actually ran into somebody else who said that they were pretty fed up with Bush but didn't like Kerry and they were going to vote for Nader. So maybe it's the other way around, because the Democrats are fearful that the left, the far left of the party, people that are totally dissatisfied with Kerry, are going to vote instead for Nader. But maybe it's like this last caller. So this is like two people. And, you know, there was a guy down the street from me that had, in 2000, that had a Bush-Cheney sign and a Nader sign on his lawn. And I always thought either there was trouble in the family, that the husband and the wife were arguing or something like that, and they got one of each sign up. Or I thought that that it was actually, the Nader sign was to encourage Democrats to throw away a vote, as they see it, on Nader. So now I'm not so sure. Okay. Well, we'll investigate this more. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. Mr. Positive, long time no see.
Hey, Mr. Positive, that's true.
How are you, sir?
Well. Good.
You know,
I'm being too formal.
I don't agree and concur philosophically, but I heard that you're for gay marriage. Let me present a couple things.
Sure.
Number one, the law of identity states by Aristotle that A is A, that organisms, and I believe in individual rights, that organisms have, specifically human beings, have rights because of the law of identity. Human beings have rights. But if you take that a step further, Peter, the law of identity states that a man is a certain type of entity and a woman is a certain type of entity, and a man and a woman have specific functions in nature. Don't you think it would be antithetical to the law of identity?
Well, that's if you accept the law of identity. Look, Aristotelian philosophy, and I don't want to get too deep into this stuff. I mean, I never even graduated college, so I'm way out of my depth. But that has been superseded as a view of the world or of how one perceives phenomena by about 200 years of contrary philosophy, Eastern philosophy that sees what they call the interpenetration of opposites, the dialectic of Hegel, and tons of stuff. I mean, you got to be pretty rigid to think that A is A and non-A is non-A. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense in nature. It doesn't make any sense in philosophy, and people have jettisoned that a long time ago. I mean, maybe a few obscure followers of that 10-cent philosopher, Ayn Rand, a terrible novelist. But other than that, it's long gone, as a great Detroiter says.
I mean, in a sense, are you saying that A can be A and non-A at the same time?
Sure. Didn't you ever hear in Asian philosophy, yin and yang, that whole symbol shows that that we have the characteristics of that which appears to be an opposite.
But, Peter, okay, that's a very good one. But if you say yin and yang,
yeah,
okay, you have two separate words. How can they be the same when you're saying yin and yang? Why wouldn't you say yin and yang or yang and yang? And yang?
You know,
by virtue of them being distinct and separate, having two different words.
You know, I just don't want either your philosophy or my philosophy to determine the people's love and the way it's consummated and we're talking about a political body that now excludes love from having official recognition. So all of this stuff about A and non-A and interpenetration of opposites and yin and yang, just a lot of crap, actually, because people I know that are gay, the gay couples that I spent time with in Boston when my wife and I and sister, I visited my sister and visited with these two couple of women. I mean, you couldn't find two more loving people. And and two of them actually have been married, two women in Boston. And I can't think of a more joyous event. And when you see them, like they showed us pictures of the wedding, and it was just everyone, kids and grandparents and mothers and fathers. And it was like a wedding. People were just happy. People were joyous. And then on the other side, you have these people like that. Get positive, man. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Mr. Warby.
Hi.
Hey, you know what? I just want to say, hey, listen, I'm going to give you a good shout-out. People like yourself and Michael Moore are the guys that are actually trying to make a difference here in America, trying to get your listeners to open up with their views and their feelings. I think that's great. And hearing the Detroiters coming in and saying how they feel about our tyrannical government and people like Bush, hey, man, I support those people trying to speak up for themselves, and they're doing their patriotic duty as a citizen of the United States. And I just want to say thanks for what you've done to the people here for Detroit.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Is that
so,
it?
You know what? Can you be able to check into something for us?
What's that?
Can you be able to check to see if Bush tried to pass an executive order trying to postpone the November election?
No. Well, that hasn't come to that yet. Actually, this election commission floated the idea under what circumstances could the election to be held this November be postponed. And in many ways, it was a trial balloon. How would people react? I know who this was. It was my sister who I was talking to today. She said her real fear is that Bush will get defeated in November, and between the time of the election and January 20th, when John Kerry is seated, there will be this huge terrorist attack, which will mean that we'll have to institute military rule. I hope not. We'll see about that, though. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your call. Thanks for the nice words, too. By the way, I forgot. I should have said this a long time ago. There's going to be an interview with me in the Ferndale Pleasant Ridge Mirror. Not a huge paper, but a good little suburban paper. And it'll be come out this Thursday. And and some of the questions I thought were kind of jerky, but you could appreciate perhaps the way I answer them. Like, what are your greatest fears? Do you believe in ghosts? You know, like I say, that doesn't, you know, you would think it doesn't lend itself really to, to what you would think could be serious social and political answers. But I did my best with it. A little earlier, we were talking about this somewhat well-known quote by General Tommy Franks, guy that led the invasion of Iraq, saying that if there's a major terrorist attack, this goes to the last caller's comment, that we could end the experiment with democracy in the United States. He called it an experiment. Now, Tom from Ann Arbor writes this to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I'm going to start coughing. Let me just swallow him. There you go. Just heard your caller say that Cigar Aficionado was somehow a less than wholly reputable source. If you take a look at the target audience for this magazine, as well as the products that are advertised in it, you'll see that Tommy Frank's statement in his interview were directed towards those who are at the very top of income and wealth distribution. So it strikes me as being an absolute appropriate vehicle for conveying information to the white old rich men. Oh, yeah, it's the worms. Who are now at the controls of corporate power. Think of it as an effective way of communicating an important heads-up or don't-worry message to those who most matter, at least among those W refers to as, quote, my base. Now, I hate to give away things in a movie, but this is an extraordinary part of, and really the key to it all, when Bush in a tuxedo is talking to these rich guys, and he says, it's a pleasure to be here with the haves and the have-mores. And they all laugh. You know, so they use the phrase, the have and the have-nots. He says, the have and the have-mores. And he said, some people call you the elite. I call you my base. So, you know, they're so arrogant. That because power, when it isn't challenged, when everybody buys the BS put out by these people and allows them to define themselves rather than to be defined by others, and no one challenges them, and this was back maybe a year or so ago, they can say anything. They know they can say anything. So he can say, you are my base. The ultra elite of this country. You are the base. You are whose behest I work. Of course, he's one of them as well. So it's not exactly like he's just their agent or anything like that. Of course, as we were reading earlier, he's speaking to the Amish, he being GW. He says, God speaks through me. Very, very dangerous man. Extraordinarily dangerous to the future of democracy in this country. To our future as what we've always come to define U.S. And then, you know, that moron earlier saying about, you're against this country. George W. Bush is against this country. Bush Co. is against this country. The criminal syndicates that have risen to power on the backs of the middle class and the working class, that's who is against America. All right, let's continue on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, good evening, Peter. How are you?
Hi.
This is the first time I called in. I didn't even know your show existed until I was flipping through the stations one tonight. A couple of things I wanted to talk about. First of all, I draw a lot of parallels between the Bush administration, the lies and the deceit, the ground that you guys talked about earlier, as well as what Clinton did last year. And unfortunately, I'm not seeing the same uprising against Bush regarding the lies and the deceit that I did against Clinton. And that bothers me.
Well, sure. And Clinton's lies were about something pretty stupid and pretty inconsequential given the results of it. I mean, you shouldn't have lied.
Certainly. Especially when Colin Powell went before the UN and said that they knew where the weapons of mass destruction were. And Bush, on several occasions, not only in his news conferences, but also in the State of the Union addresses as he was preparing the nation for war, was very convincing. He said that he had these reasons. He knew where these weapons were. And he had concrete evidence that there were ties between Iraq and that regime and what occurred.
Between in September 11th.
Absolutely.
Which was turned out to be just another lie that Cheney keeps repeating. And although he, on one hand he repeats it, then he says he never says it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's very troubling because, again, although I don't condone what Clinton did, and certainly he got what he deserved, but I fail to see any uprising and any concern regarding Bush and his people, and the fact that they were not 100% truthful. Where are people rising up and blasting him?
Well, I've used this example before. If Gore would have been properly seated as the president, and September 11th would have occurred, the Republicans probably would have moved to impeach him. And you know what? I might have even supported that. I mean, I think any president that was responsible for an administration that allowed such a catastrophic failure of intelligence and failed to act on the intelligence that he received that such an attack was coming, including the use of hijacking airplanes, and did nothing except sit on his duff in Crawford, Texas, deserves to be impeached for misfeasance in office.
Not showing leadership.
Yeah, yeah. He got the warning. He did nothing. All right, thank you very much. I'm glad you found us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, by the way, to that caller and anyone else just joining us, you can kind of keep abreast of things by going to my website at peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. You can send me email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I'm developing a mailing list now, and I send things out usually weekly. So if you want that, just go to the address and tell me you want to be on the list. What did I was slamming? I was thinking, oh, yeah, I don't know, you know. I probably shouldn't apologize or anything like that, but I haven't been moving quite as diligently on my website as I have in the past because, I mean, people would write me and say, you're the lone voice out there. Well, of course it wasn't true. There were hundreds, even thousands of other voices, but in public, I think that's what people identified me and a precious few others, say a year and particularly 2 years ago, we were voices in the wilderness. Now, I mean, hey, I think instead of changing my website every 12 hours like I used to, I'm thinking, here's Michael Moore's film being seen by tens of millions of people by grossing $100 million. And all these other new films coming out, all these books coming out. So I've been a little, yeah, taking it slower, letting Michael and others do the work. But I'd still recommend it. There's a lot on, I think, on my site to recommend it. All right, let's take another call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. I want to say, you know, you've got a great show.
Thanks.
I've been listening for a couple weeks before you went off, and I really enjoy it. I have a comment about the so-called hijacking of the 2001 election.
Sure.
People tend to forget that the president isn't elected directly in this country. It's the Electoral College actually elects the president.
Right.
So, you know, people tend to forget that, and I think that's a big point that that doesn't come up a lot.
Well,
know, yes.
Well, it's funny that there was no move to reform this because, and you know, it didn't seem so, or maybe I'm wrong, but there wasn't any public outcry that the man who came in second, if you're willing to accept the results of the Supreme Court, even so, the guy that came in second in the popular vote became the president. I mean, what is this? There's a race in a democratic country. And the loser becomes the winner.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I believe that the Electoral College is outdated and does need to be reformed. I would like to personally see the country go to a direct election.
Uh-huh.
It's happened before, though. So, I mean, this isn't the first time that the person that came in second with the least popular vote has become president.
Right, it was in the 1880s, and that was, who was that?
Or 18, Harrison.
1876, was that? Was the compromise of 1876?
Benjamin Harrison had defeated Grover Cleveland, and Benjamin Harrison received less popular votes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it happened a couple other times other than that, too. So it wasn't the first time. I do believe the Electoral College does need to be changed, but a lot of people forget that, and all they focus on is, oh, the popular vote, the popular vote.
Well, yeah, and you're right. It is the Electoral College, after all, is designed by the framers of the Constitution. All right, hey, I got to go. Thank you.
Yep, thanks.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us here. Stephen Lincoln Park writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, says that a listener that stated Michael Moore wanted to see more troops be killed in Iraq may have heard it on the... You know what? I don't even want... This guy's rating. It's one of these Foxhole News commentators. I don't even want to give the guy's name because he's dying in the ratings, and I don't even want to send anybody over there. Anyways, that this person he mentioned has a show. Oh, boy, I was wrong. It's on MSNBC. Anyways, it's still tanking. I've heard him state it two times myself. So it's one thing for a commentator to say his opinion is, as opposed to then some sloppy listener who hears that as, that's what Michael Moore wanted. Well, go see the film, and you'll obviously see that Michael's heart is certainly not in that mode. Hi, it's WRIF. You're our final caller. Go ahead.
Hey, man, this is our first time listening to your show. Me and my fiance were just flipping through the channels, and we found it, and we are definitely impressed.
Well, thank you.
It's extremely refreshing to hear something that's not so closed-minded as everything else that's out there. I had to say one thing, though. Every great regime and every great power that's ever ruled in the history of mankind has been toppled. Every ruthless, tyrannical leader has been brought down by the masses. And in this case, it's just going to come to the point when the people have had enough, you know, and that's when it's going to happen. But I hope it's not in a bloodbath as it has happened so many times before in history.
Well, I hope so. I certainly feel like that. But, yeah, I mean, if you've just heard it for the first time, then you haven't heard me say like 1,000 times before the old Lincoln quote that that you can fool all the people. You can fool all the people some of the time, some of the people all the time, but not all the people all the time. And there's this minority, probably mostly conservatives, that you can fool them all the time because they want to be fooled. But I agree with you 100%. And hey, let me just welcome you. But on the other hand, I've got to take this break, and then we got to play these interviews. So thanks for joining us, and your observation is absolutely correct.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. Bye now. But that reminds me about regimes being toppled. I just want to get this one piece in, and then we'll go to our commercials. Remember when the invasion began, and the United States troops reached Baghdad, and then there were these joyous scenes of Iraqis, as we were told, hauling down the statue of the hated dictator. Hey, he was like most dictators, Hitler, Stalin, Mao. It's hard to really gauge. A lot of people love those dictators. Maybe the same third of the people that love George W. Bush or something like that. But, the people that love dictators. But anyways, like everything else about the Iraq War, the tumbling of that statue, the pulling it down, was a total fake. If you read my website, because I got it from somewhere else when that happened, you knew it. But still, a lot of people saw it over and over again on Foxhole News. And the article says, Marine colonel, not Iraqi, spurred toppling of Saddam's statue. The U.S. Army's internal study of the war criticizes some efforts by its own psychological operations units, PSYOP, but one spur-of-the-moment effort last year produced the most memorable image of the invasion. As the Iraqi regime was collapsing on April 9, 2003, U.S. Marines converged on Firdaus Square in central Baghdad, site of an enormous statue of Saddam Hussein. It was a Marine colonel, not joyous Iraqi civilians, as was widely assumed from the TV images. It was assumed, and it was assumed because that's the way it was portrayed. There was only a couple hundred people involved in this, and there were people from the Iraqi National Council. This is the Ahmed Chalabi, this group that has sucked hundreds of millions of dollars out of our taxpayer dough and then turned out to be giving information to the Iranians. Anyways, so his little gang was brought in, flown in by the Americans, and they were the ones that were put in Firdaus Square after the Marines decided they would topple it down. Anyways, this Marine colonel decided to topple the statue. It was a quick-thinking Army PSYOP team that made it appear to be a spontaneous Iraqi undertaking. Think of the import of that statement there from the Los Angeles Times. You may have been watching Foxhole News or even some of the networks and were thrilled with the idea that this hideous, vicious dictator, forgetting about it that he was supported by Reagan and Bush and what have you, he was an awful son of a bitch. He hurt hundreds of thousands of people, killed people, presided over a war that killed a million people. And there were the Iraqis finally being freed. And your heart soared. And it turned out it was just TV manipulation, nothing more. After the colonel, who was not named in the report, selected the statue as a target of opportunity, So your heart's soaring, and these guys are coldly calculating a target of opportunity. The PSYOP team used loudspeakers to encourage Iraqi civilians to assist. The Marines draped an American flag over the statue's face. God bless them, but we were thinking from PSYOP school that this was just bad news, they wrote in the report. We didn't want to look like an occupation force, and some of the Iraqis were saying, no, we want an Iraqi flag. Well, what the hell, it was an invasion and an occupation, and it was all a fake, and Bush lied, and people died. All right, hang on, we got some pretty good interviews for you.
Gentlemen, make the perfect landing at the Landing Strip Lounge just west of Detroit Metro Airport. The infamous Landing Strip has rocked Romulus for 26 years, bringing you the most beautiful showgirls at the lowest prices, stoplight food and intoxicants, and 7 days a week of nonstop fun. Our lovely ladies invite you to our SmackDown Bash, Thursday night, April 22nd. Party with the wrestling superstars of the WWE and TNA. Get free autographs, gifts, prizes, and lots of specials. Join the gorgeous girls of the Landing Strip for Monday Night Strip Search Amateur Night. Get photos of the hotties on your bike at the Landing Strip's Motorcycle Saturdays. Feast on a free buffet daily 12 noon to 6 and drink and drown on half-price drafts daily 4 to 9. The Landing Strip's beautiful women and bikini-clad flight attendants entertain you 7 days a week, 12 noon to 2 a.m. And there is never a dress code. The Landing Strip is located on Goddard, half mile west of Wayne Road, 1 mile west of Detroit Metro Airport. Call 1-800-2-RUNWAY. For beautiful girls, top flight food, low prices, and non-stop fun, I'll be waiting to see you at the Strip.
No matter how you count it or store it, you still know how to save it. It's cash. And when you buy your car from Red Holman Pontiac GMC Truck, you'll get to keep more of it than with any other dealer. It's lease pull-ahead time July 7th through August 2nd. If your lease expires from now until March 31st, 2005, GMAC will waive all remaining payments upon purchase or lease of a new GM vehicle. Get up to $5,000 in rebates on select Pontiac and GMC trucks. Right now, Red Holman has over 300 Grand Ams, 240 Grand Prix, 150 GMC Envoys in stock and ready to roll. There are 1,500 total new units available located on over 13 acres. A fantastic new lease rate is available for July, lowering lease payments and waiving security deposits on all Envoys. Red Holman has no finance and insurance salespeople. They don't charge dock fees. Red Holman hasn't charged dock fees for 47 years. Never have, never will. Just trust, fairness, and commitment. Lease pull-aheads going on now at Red Holman Pontiac GMC Truck on Ford Road, 2 miles east of I-275 at the Ford Road exit, or visit redholman.com.
Imagine if we Caribbeans took life as seriously as the rest of the world.
Man, I got a job interview. How shall I play it?
Be humble.
Be cocky.
Cocky so 80s. Tell them you're a team player.
Tell them you're a major player.
Tell them you can add value.
Tell them you can make their stock price soar on Wall Street.
Whatever they offer, accept it.
Tell them you want double. Show us your business card.
Winston. Goat herd. Cool font.
No, it's too aggressive. It should be a serif.
Serifs are for losers.
Man, I can't decide. I need a sabbatical.
Relax. Malibu makes choosing seriously easy. Whether you choose new pineapple or new mango, you can't go wrong. They're both made with the finest Caribbean rum, and they both taste amazing with lemon-lime soda. Malibu, it's seriously easygoing.
Take it easy. Drink in moderation. Malibu Caribbean rum with natural mango or pineapple flavor. 21% alcohol by volume. Allied Domecq Spirits. USA, Westport, Connecticut.
Do you have what it takes to be the elite of the elite? Test your skills this Monday, July 26th at the Project Revolution concert as the America's Army Challenge Tour rolls through DTE Music Center. Immerse yourself in the competitive Army tournament with America's Army Special Forces, the only video game developed by the world's premier land force, the United States Army. From the barracks to the battlefield, it's the most authentic military game you'll ever play. Team-based missions include combat search and rescue, direct action, surveillance and reconnaissance, and unconventional warfare. Think you've got what it takes? Then strap on some courage and come on down. It's a can't-miss summer event where prizes are given away and bragging rights are earned. The America's Army Challenge Tour this Saturday, July 26th, from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Army booth. Also register for your chance to win an autographed Linkin Park guitar. For more information, visit www.com. www.americasarmy.com. To learn more about the U.S. Army, visit GoArmy.com or call 1-800-USA-ARMY today.
Dr. Tafor and the Windsor Laser Eye Institute. More experience, more options, more value.
More experience.
Did you know that Dr. Tafor at Windsor Laser Eye Institute has performed well over 30,000 LASIK procedures? Or that he was the first in North America to perform LASIK over a decade ago?
More options.
Now, Dr. Tafor is the first to offer custom cornea wavefront LASIK, an advanced system light years beyond conventional LASIK, so that you can enjoy a future free from glasses or contacts. Now, more than ever, Dr. Tafor can customize treatments specific to you, ensuring the best possible results and safety.
More value.
With the most experience, personalized treatment, and state-of-the-art technology, why would you trust your eyes to anyone else? Call 800-663-IC for a free one-on-one consultation with Dr. Tafor. Call 800-663-IC or go to WLEI.com. The Windsor Laser Eye Institute. More experience, more options, more value.
This is WRF Detroit. Peter Werby here with you. And please stay tuned for these interviews. I got one coming right up. And then at about 1:30, it'll be Laura Flanders with her new book, The W Effect, Bush's War on Women. Here you go. Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be talking to you once again. The phenomenal success of Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 is interesting in itself, of course, and what it portrays, the debate that it's brought about. But it's also opened the door for other documentaries. People usually don't go to see them. They wind up on public television or in small venues. But it seems that Michael Moore's movie has opened the door wide. And another fine example of documentary work that is going to be hitting our city. It's called The Corporation. It's a film by Mark Akbar, Jennifer Abbott, and Joel Bakken. And our guest is Jennifer Abbott. She's the director and also edited as well. And she's speaking to us from Galliano, British Columbia, a little island near Vancouver. Jennifer Abbott, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Am I correct? That was my assumption. Is it yours as well that Michael Moore's movie has made it a lot easier for films like The Corporation to get public viewing?
Yes. I think it goes back before Fahrenheit 9/11, however, to even his earlier works, Roger and Me, and Bowling for Columbine more recently. There's been other very successful documentaries as well, Spellbound and Winged Migration, and I think that really shows theaters that documentaries are certainly films that a lot of people want to see and that they can be commercially successful.
Yeah, we should tell people, too, it's my mistake here, that the film The Corporation is going to be opening Friday, July 23rd, at the main theater in Royal Oak. That's Main and 11 Mile Road, and we'll keep mentioning that for you. And that's where, actually, Michael Moore's film is showing on two screens, so that would be unless they're putting on closing one of the screens on, it'll mean that two screens for Michael Moore, one for The Corporation, and I think, Jennifer Abbott, that probably the difference between your film, The Corporation, and the others that you mentioned is that yours has a particular political point of view or a social critique. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Sure. Well, what our film does is it looks at the very institution of the corporation, which we consider the dominant institution of our day. Other films have looked at this corporation or that. We say, well, what is it about this institution that is unique? We established that the corporation was legally given personhood 150 years ago. Being the case, we say, what kind of person is the corporate person? And in a very rigorous way, through the utilization of case studies, we diagnose that person as a psychopath. So that's a pretty heavy critique against the corporation. I think it is, however, quite fair, and some of our most vehement critics are actually corporate insiders themselves.
Meaning that appear in the film.
That's right.
And what's the structure of the film? You have an enormous number of people that you have in your literature that speak, including Michael Moore himself, Noam Chomsky. I'm trying to think of people who people would know. Maud Barlow.
Howard Zinn would be another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good.
Also, though, it's very important to point out that we have some of the CEOs of the largest corporations in the world. We have the executive director of a right-wing think tank. So, we certainly hear from both insiders and critics on this very important subject.
Also, Jeremy Rifkin, I'm thinking of people we have interviewed. Naomi Klein, who we interviewed recently. Dr. Vandana Shiva, who I have not interviewed, but would love to. And so is this all talking heads? I mean, there's an enormous number of people here. I mean, and I don't say that disparagingly. They all seem extraordinarily interesting.
Right. Well, there are over, well, actually 40 interview subjects. We interviewed 72. 40 made the cut. But by no means is this just a Talking Heads documentary. I worked as both the co-director and editor with 450 hours of footage that we had accumulated. It's a very, very layered documentary, and certainly the reviews say that it is entertaining and engaging and very complex. So I think probably, you know, the actual time that one actually views a talking head is not as much as when we see other images.
Now, I think for better or for worse, entertaining is an extraordinarily important aspect. Even when Michael Moore is treating official government lying and the destruction of Iraq and gun violence and the documentary he did before the current one, you always are getting some laughs, some chuckles, or you are entertained with his ironic, humorous sense. Is there that in your film, The Corporation, as well?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, without question, one of the best things about being human is our ability to laugh, and especially our ability to laugh in the face of grave danger. And, you know, we really are saying that this is an urgent situation, and the life as we know it is in peril. That said, the film is peppered with humor throughout, a different kind of humor than Michael Moore humor. I think it's sort of a more Canadian humor, but it was very, very important to us that be there in the film, and that the film also be entertaining. Although we usually use the word engaging, you know, the best ideas fall flat if they're presented in a dreary fashion. And I think that Mark Akbar and Joel Bakken and myself really come from the point of view of respecting the viewer. You know, the viewer is going to sit and watch our film for two hours and almost a half of their time, and we really wanted that experience to be powerful and emotionally engaging and entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Now, for I guess I used this phrase earlier, for better or for worse, people in this society, North American society, put a lot of emphasis on credentials, and I was extraordinarily impressed with the credentials of Joel Bakken, who is a Canadian law professor and a legal theorist as well, and it would take almost too much time to list all his credentials. But he contends the modern business corporation is created by law to function like a psychopathic personality. Now, many of us might have or may have criticisms of the corporations, how they dominate politics, how they may come into a city and drive out all the independent businesses there at worst. But I don't think too many people ever think of it as a psychopathic personality. Where does, and the reason I brought up Joel Bakken's credentials is, here's a man that could have indicted the concept of corporation solely on legal terms, yet he also brings in this psychoanalytic view. How does he do that? And in the film, The Corporation, how does that work as a plot device, or how does it drive the film?
Sure. Well, as I said, the corporation is legally a person. We ask the question, what kind of person is this corporate person? We actually utilize the psychopathic checklist drawn from both the World Health Organization and the DSM-IV, the American Psychiatric Institute, to go through a list of criteria which we as a society use to diagnose flesh and blood psychopaths. Some examples are extremely self-interested, inability to care about having hurt others, inability to maintain enduring relationships, inability to admit guilt, just as some examples. And in real life, you only have to have three of the criteria to be diagnosed as a psychopath, wherein the corporation in our film gets 6 out of 6. It's really uncanny the way the corporate form has been structured legally, because it is a social construct. It is a legal construct. and its primary operating principle is so extraordinarily self-interested that I don't think really anyone who looks at the facts very clearly can deny how uncannily this institution, if looked upon as a person, fits the diagnosis of a psychopath.
Well, do you think, I don't think that's a big shock to anybody that corporations act in their own self-interest.
Well, I think that it's not a big shock to anybody that, of course, corporations exist to make a profit. That's not head-breaking news. Fewer people know about, however, is that there actually is a principle called the best interest principle that was established through a series of legal decisions. And that principle states that it is actually the legal mandate of the corporation to prioritize everything, to prioritize shareholders above everything else, including the public good. And the priorities of shareholders has been interpreted to mean their profit. So indeed, profit is supposed to be above everything else in terms of a decision-making process, including the public good.
Well, one of the first capitalist theorists, Adam Smith, said that by each seeking their own self-interest, the community interest overall will be served. I don't think he envisioned Walmart or... In fact, I've often said that sooner or later we're going to wind up with one worldwide corporation called International General. But the seeking the self-interest would... be, you know, in a competitive world, you would think, well, gee, everything would kind of balance out.
Well, you know, Adam, it's funny because a lot of people cite Adam Smith, especially on the right, as he's sort of the right-wing poster boy, but he's really been misinterpreted because he did warn against the vast accumulation of resources by few individuals, and he did not think that would serve the principle which you just referenced, in terms of everybody acting in their own self-interest, because, of course, one body can simply dwarf the resources of individuals. And so he warned against the phenomenon that we presently see.
No, you're correct. He would have been horrified at the level that corporations control public life on so many different levels. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Tom Hartman. He's been a guest on this show several times. He's written a book called Unequal Protection, and it talks about the U.S. Supreme Court decision somewhere in the late 1880s where, as you said, Jennifer Abbott, earlier, that corporations gained personhood. And how does that work in Canada? Is it quite the same?
It is. Corporations have legal personhood here, as they do in most, if not all, industrialized countries. The way we got here has been a different process, but it works out the same in the courts.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Peter Werby Show. I'm talking with Jennifer Abbott. She is the co-director and editor of the film, the documentary coming to the main theater this week, called The Corporation. And it raises the thesis of the film itself is that corporations function like psychopathic personalities. Was this hard to find people to... I can imagine people on the left, Howard Zinn or Noam Chomsky or Naomi Klein, people like that, going, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. How did the corporate people that you interviewed for your film, The Corporation, how did they react to the thesis?
Well, as in how did we get them to participate in the film?
No, not so much when you said, well, here's, or did you say, here's our central thesis,
Well, we didn't say, I mean, we certainly did not at any time misrepresent ourselves. We said that we were doing a documentary about the modern-day corporation and that we were including different sides of the spectrum. They are PR people, and they have very, very highly paid PR people. Were totally free to ask us anything that they wanted to before anybody participated. So that was the approach that we took.
Oh, so you didn't go up to them and say, hey, we're doing a film that shows the corporation as a psychopathic personality. Would you like to be in?
We didn't, and you know...
That's okay. I'm okay with that.
The film, though, while we're... the film, in terms of it actually being made, and coming together, is very process-oriented. And I think that that's one element of the film, but it's certainly not the only element of the film.
Now, when I'm just looking at page one of Who's Who in the corporation, so I'm the first CEO I'm looking at is Ray Anderson, who's CEO of Interface, the world's largest commercial carpet manufacturer. Now, has he or anyone else said, hey, I was, what do they call that, like ambush journalism? Has anybody complained about being in this?
No, absolutely not. And actually, Ray Anderson is one of the stars of the film. He was actually at Sundance with us, for example. He got a standing ovation. And he was in New York with us, too, at the theatrical launch and put on a party. He really loves the film. You know, that said, he's a big critic of the corporation. And he, as a CEO, had an epiphany 20 years after he founded his company and has totally shifted the mandate of his corporation as a result. Other CEOs that are in the film, we've had very positive feedback from Mark Moody Stewart, former chairman of Shell, for example, and others as well. Now, I think that's what's really important to state is that we really don't demonize corporate insiders. We're not pointing our finger at them, you know, suggesting that they're up in their ivory towers, rubbing their hands together, saying, what kind of harm can we inflict upon the world today? Not at all. I think, you know, many of them, not all, are good people with good intentions. But the problem that we point to, among others, is that the institution is inherently flawed.
Mm-hmm.
It's structured to wreak havoc in the world in many ways. It does some good. It provides jobs, provides some goods and services that are positive for people, but it does a great deal of harm. So we're really looking at the very institution of the corporation.
Now, I mentioned earlier Tom Hartman, the author of Unequal Protection, who's been a guest several times on this program. And in his latest book, I can't even think of it off the top of my head, but I know it's, I think it may be even just We the People. And he says with the dominance of corporations, as you indicate in your film, the corporations, the dominant institution in this era, that it really is fascism, not in the sense of Nazis with whips, but of the political economic structure, that wealth rules rather than democratic rules. Does your film go anywhere in this direction?
Yes, I think it does. It doesn't come out and say exactly what Tom Hartman is saying. You know, certainly beginning in the 1970s with deregulation and privatization and corporate involvement in the political process snowballing to the extent that it is now, we see this institution arise as a governing body, and yet it has no electoral mandate. It is not accountable to the people in any way, shape, or form. People can critique government all they like, but it is theoretically supposed to be in the hands of the people, and that we can boot a government out. So, you know, this is a very big problem that we do point to in our film.
Mm-hmm. I was astounded in some of Tom Hartman's work where he informed us, as I'm sure you know, that prior to the late 1880s, most states had laws forbidding corporations to donate to political candidacies or even to attempt to influence legislation. It was a felony. It was a state felony.
Absolutely, and there were strict controls of the corporate form when the corporation was first took its modern day form, and that include some corporations were just set up to conduct a very limited function, like for example building a bridge, and then they were dissolved,
mm-hmm.
and they were theoretically, in theory at least, supposed to serve the public good. That is no longer a principle that governs the corporation.
Now, this seems... In fact, let me take this time to reintroduce you because I always forget that people don't necessarily on radio start at the beginning and hear towards the end of a conversation. My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Jennifer Abbott. She's the director, the co-director and the editor of the documentary, The Corporation. And it examines modern corporations from the standpoint, the thesis that it was the modern business corporation created by law to function like a psychopathic personality. And it's going to be opening this week on Friday, July 23rd, at the Main Theater in Royal Oak on Main and 11 Mile Road. This is usually, sounds like a final question, but it's not for you. And that is that that people that wanted change, generally in the past, 17th, 18th, 19th, even 20th century, had to, their main opponent to change was usually the bulwark, as you were indicating, as the political state. But now, with the conjuncture of the political state and this economic entity that can dominate all spheres of life, control any number of aspects of our community, from what kind of businesses can exist to whether we get employment and how much. I mean, it seems like us little old human beings don't have a chance. Do people in the film, the corporation, talk about this?
Yes, I think it was very important to us that we not end simply in despair and feeling the weight of all these issues on our shoulders. The latter part of the film documents success stories, including some of the ones that I think are most inspirational, like Bechtel being thrown out of Bolivia, really by the people. I mean, that was an instance where a water contract was given to a corporation that resulted in a great deal of hardship for the people. They rose up. People lost their lives and were injured for life, but they won, and they now control the water of Bolivia. There's still problems, but it's a very inspirational victory. We have others as well, and that's the note upon which we chose to end the film. You know, there are so many people around the world and organizations that are combating corporate rule. And I think it's very important to look at this historically. We compare the corporation to other dominant institutions of our day, you know, the Communist Party or the Church, and, you know, and also the state, for that matter. And these institutions, in their heyday, also appeared omnipotent and just as powerful as the corporation, and yet they crumbled. Now, we're not saying that the corporation is going to crumble tomorrow, nor that it necessarily should, but rather that it's inevitable that it changes, and that hopefully we constructed the corporation as a society, and hopefully we can find ways to reconstruct it so that it is not such a destructive force in our society.
Well, Jennifer Abbott, I mean, I think you hit on the key to it. If we're passive as a population, almost anything can be practiced upon us. And it's almost like a bunch of guys sitting way up high start doing stuff, and they say, well, how are they reacting? And they go, well, they're calling talk shows. Are they doing anything politically or in their communities or churches or in their unions? No, okay, we're going to ratchet it up just a little more. No, there's the end. So I think once the people take a stand, well, then things can change, but certainly not until then. And I think that's an extraordinarily important factor. Tell me just a little before we finish about how the corporation has been viewed by critics and by, well, just anybody who has been able to assess the film. I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking very excited to look, to see it.
Well, we released, we've won now, I guess, 20 awards at international film festivals.
Really?
Including, I guess it's about 7 or 8 right now, and they're Audience Choice Awards, including the Audience Choice Award for World Cinema at Sundance Film Festival. We opened theatrically in January in Canada, originally in 2 cities for a week. In those particular cities, it was held over for 5 months, and we've released in about 70 cities in Canada, and we're now the top-grossing documentary in Canadian history. We have theatrical releases now scheduled for most of Europe, Japan, Australia, South Korea, and other countries. And we've certainly had very favorable reviews in a lot of press, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Economist, even Fortune magazine. It was very interesting, did quite an article recently. So certainly, I mean, the attention the film has got is beyond my wildest dreams, and for the most part, people have been extraordinarily positive, so it's been very gratifying.
Well, I think the film work that has been done, I mean, ever since the beginning of documentaries in the 30s, have very frequently been of incredible character, have showed people what the world is all about, yet often were ignored and have never had this kind of widespread distribution, particularly if they were political or had a social point of view. And I wonder if it is actually now now, given the experience of your film, The Corporation, of Michael Moore's film, the fact that there's other documentaries coming out, that in that that you folks are taking the place of traditional political opposition, which doesn't really exist. Like we say in the States here, we don't have an opposition party. We have another party. And if it was, if there would have been an opposition party, pretty much everything that was in September or in Fahrenheit 9/11 would have been uttered by an opposition party. So this this work has fallen to you folks.
Well, I think that's true, and not only that, of course, we're Canadian, and we don't even have a right to vote in the United States, and nor should we, of course. However, whatever the United States does affects the world so dramatically. And so, you know, one of the things that Canadians do very well, especially left-wing Canadians, is critique the United States, and I think that's apparent here.
You guys don't hate us, do you?
Oh, no. We don't hate Americans. We certainly do not like George Bush and the war in Iraq and many, many other things that are going on that originate from American foreign policy. But we know that there's some wonderful Americans down there that are equally committed to creating a compassionate world that we can all live in.
Well, ooh, we got about 30 seconds. Any new projects ahead for you or you and Mark Akbar and others?
Well, I did just get a Canada Council grant, I'm very happy to say, to develop a new film. It's a little early to talk about it, but that's what I'll be doing.
That's
I know
great.
Joel is working on another book, and Mark, because he's also the producer of the film, he is... And I'm a mother, and so I don't go on the road as much as Mark, but Mark is really promoting the film internationally as the producer as well.
Okay, the film is The Corporation. It's going to be opening this Friday, July 23rd, at the Royal Oak Theater. That's Main and 11 Mile Road. My guest has been Jennifer Abbott. Jennifer, thanks for having joined me on The Peter Werby Show.
Well, thank you. It was really a pleasure to be here.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist, whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Hey, it's Mike Walters from The Morning Show, and I'm as excited as you are that summer is officially here. Summer, of course, means hot weather, but extreme temperatures can really affect your car's transmission, and you certainly don't need a breakdown in the middle of a summer road trip or when you're rolling around town with your buds. So if you're hearing any grinding, feeling slipping, seeing fluid, or think you might have a transmission problem, visit one of AAMCO's 4 locations in the Detroit area. Call 1-800-GO-AAMCO, that's AAMCO, for the center nearest you. Tell them I sent you for a free diagnostic check at participating centers. Just call for an appointment. AAMCO technicians are the best in the field. They're trained and certified in advanced transmission diagnosis, repair, and maintenance. So taking your car to AAMCO is like having vacation insurance. And with the skyrocketing gas prices, a better running car means better gas mileage. For a job done right, guaranteed, at a price that's right, AAMCO, AAMCO.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What the hell does Detroit want with Arkansas?
Well, you know, just same old thing. Just shoot the breeze, you know.
Damn, I ain't got time to mess you damn people up there. I got work to do here, and you keep calling, raising hell with me. What's the matter? Every week or...
Well, you become an important part of the program, Delbert. It's actually should be a compliment.
Yeah.
What the hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
I always knew you were bastard, but man, oh man.
You and Mike in the morning. Yes. The broadcast program. On the Riff.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget. You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff. All day Thursday from your walk right in.
For joining me, I've been doing this a lot lately, getting people back on that write great books, that are great interviews, and it's a pleasure to welcome back Laura Flanders. You may remember her. She was the author of Bushwomen, Tales of a Cynical Species, and I think it was like a month to 6 weeks ago that we had Laura on. Laura Flanders is the host of the Laura Flanders Show. It's heard weekend, 7 to 10 p.m. on the new Air America Radio Network. And she writes regularly for TomPaine.com, The Nation, Ms. Magazine, ZNet, and probably more places than I can even, or even I should take the time to mention. Laura Flanders, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, glad to be back with you, Peter.
Now, another book you have out, it's brand new, it's just released, The W Effect, Bush's War on Women. It's edited by you, Laura Flanders, and it's a series of authors looking at the impact of Bush policies on women. Now, there's a pattern here, Laura Flanders, particularly since this is published by the Feminist Press. Mm-hmm. Most of you, although I was even a guest on your radio show recently, but and you talk about a whole range of issues. Usually when you write, it's about women's issues.
These books have been about women's issues.
Right.
I write about any number of things in journalism, but the Feminist Press approached me to pull together a collection on women because I guess my shtick has been since my days at FAIR, the Media Watch group, that, you know, we don't get an accurate picture of our world as long as women are sidelined in reporting, and women continue to be sidelined, and I continue to try to put them front and center, not because I think it's just a problem for women, but it's a problem for everybody, and nowhere could that be clearer than with respect to the record of the Bush administration. He says one thing, W stands for women, but the reality is really something else.
Well, you actually anticipated a question of mine, which was, this is not a book for women, and why should us guys care about any of the issues in here? Obviously, if there's a war on women, we should, because all of us have mothers, a lot of us have very close women in our lives, sisters, wives, friends, what have you.
Yeah, I mean, this book is not only for women or only by women. There are good articles in there by Bill Berkowitz and Steve Bannon and Richard Goldstein, among others. The subtitle is maybe a little misleading. It actually wasn't my idea. The W Effect was the title I came up with. And I think what we're looking at is less an assault on women per se than an assault on gender equality. And that's not good for guys either because, you know, the Feminist Project, whatever you may think of the word, has been to try to look at the way that gender affects the distribution of power in our society. And that's not just power for men, but also for women. How do gender relations, gender expectations, gender roles affect our lives? I mean, men know as much as the rest of us that the sort of limited vision of what it is to be a man in U.S. society has really shrunk the number of possibilities available to men when it comes to their choices of how they want to live their life and what kind of person they want to be. In this case, what we've got here is a Bush administration that swore that it would restore civility to the White House, coming in after Bill Clinton making a lot of stains of various kinds on the presidency and on blue dresses. Well, they've restored something. What they've restored is patriarchy, very rigid views of what women's role should be in society, what men's role should be in society. Men should be the wage earner. Women should be looking after kids. This may sound like reactionary old stuff, but heck, it's really the attitude that has been driving a lot of the policy that our public servants have been making, and it's no accident, because into public jobs, GW's team have put old-style extremist fundamentalists, people who believe that it's like the Judge Holmes, who was appointed last week, have written that it is appropriate, important for a woman to subordinate herself to her husband in a marriage. I mean, I don't think subordinated relationships are good for anybody.
Laura Flanders, let me make the patriarch argument, one, of course, I don't believe. But in a society that has such a disproportionate spread of wealth, and so how do we get wealth to people based on what? Well, if we can take one group and because of their skin color or their ethnic origin, we give them a lot less. Well, then if you take a whole half the population and give them less or don't even let them into the to the job market, that leaves a lot more for us white guys to have. So the whole idea of gender and racial equality has actually demanded that a fairly small pie be split more without ever really looking at the people that get the big part of it, the worms, the white old rich men.
Right.
So can you make an argument that there is an economic...
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hey, it's Mike Walters from The Morning Show, and I'm as excited as you are that summer is official.
I mean, I think the argument for maintain the patriarchy for a handful of rich white males is just as you said, suppress the wage levels of those at the bottom of the labor ladder, whether that's sweatshop workers or... not paid much attention to by the media, inadequately defended by trade unions, and really not given much of a voice. That does make it easier for exploitation. But the point we're making here in the W effect is that the status quo has changed. It used to be that the fragile job
problem. Visit one of AMCO's four locations in the Detroit area. Call 1-800-GO-AMCO. That's AAMCO for the center nearest you. Tell them I sent you for a free diagnostic check at
dangerous workplaces. That was sort of the stuff of women's work. Women's jobs tended to be those kind of fragile employment. Increasingly, those are the jobs for everybody. Temporary work without benefits in bad conditions. If you want to look at what part of the economy is growing, it's that part. Fully, we have protected the women who, until recently, were the ones with those kinds of women's jobs. I mean, I hope I'm making sense here, but
sure.
We still have a media that treats women as if they're...
Oh. Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff for your moving...
But they're the canaries in the coal mine of our economy, our health system, our education system. They typically feel the hit first, and that's exactly what's going on now. But it isn't only them that the pain is coming to.
You mentioned that the subtitle, Bush's War on Women, was not yours, but there's been a lot lately in the corporate press saying that that the level of discourse in this country has gotten so bitter. And it'd be one thing to say the W effect, Bush's mistaken policies regarding women, as opposed to Bush's war on women. Personally, I don't have any problem with it. But how do you?
Well, I don't have a problem with the war part. I had a problem with the women part because I really do think it affects more than just women.
Okay.
Insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique, or
whether you are talking about Afghanistan or Iraq, or right here at home, you have an ideological administration that... whatever you want to call it. So very practically speaking, Bush policy, unilateralism, imperialism, this has had and is having the effect of simply fueling an opposition coming from, well, extremist forces around the world who have, as part of their kind of, who are kind of embracing reactionary religious positions on the role of women in society as part of their kind of national independence resistance movement. I mean, one of the things I'm proudest about in this book is we have, for the first time in print, some of the writings of a woman who goes by the name of Riverbend. She's been doing a weblog from Baghdad since the beginning of the U.S. invasion. She's an Iraqi woman, loves Americans, spent time in the USA, was kind of mixed about how she felt about the invasion, absolutely adamantly opposed to Saddam Hussein. She begins the entry that we reprint here, and there's a lot of going to and fro to get permission to put this out there, and I'm so glad we got the rights, by saying, this is August of last year, females can no longer leave their homes alone. Each time I go out, Ian, either a father, uncle, or cousin has to accompany me. It feels like we've gone back 50 years since the beginning of the occupation. A woman or girl out alone risks anything from insults to abduction.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. I thought Bush brags that we've liberated the women
of
Afghanistan.
Well, that's why you need to read what the women are actually saying.
Actually,
it's a little bit of a different reality.
In Iraq, it actually has gotten extraordinarily worse for women, as you're indicating. But what about Afghanistan?
Afghanistan, a very mixed picture. There's an interesting interview in this book with a woman called Masuda Sultan, who had voted for George W. Bush. She came from a Republican family, but her family of Afghan Americans. She supported the bombing of Afghanistan after 9/11 because she felt that at least the ousting of the Taliban would be a good thing, and the engagement of the United States with that country, the commitment, the involvement of the United States in reconstructing Afghanistan after so many years of war in which the U.S. was involved would be a good thing, would have a good long-term result. Well, she went back to Afghanistan in November of 2001, found scores of her own family, her extended family, had been killed in misguided bombing, supposedly targeting Taliban targets, in fact targeting a village where people had evacuated to seek safety, and I think she lost something like 23 members of her own family. She saw the cost up close, became completely involved, and has been going to and fro now, working with Women for Afghan Women, and she's furious because of the lack of engagement of the U.S. administration. All this talk is one thing, but the money has not gone through, and the situation for women is still night and day. If you're in Kabul, the capital, one thing. If you're anywhere else, it's very, very different. And the U.S. support for warlords who have as bad a record on gender rights as the Taliban ever did hasn't improved matters. It's made things worse.
Well, we know the record of the Taliban, of the Northern Alliance, of the many of the religious forces that have been released in a secular society in Iraq. But here in the United States, when you talk about the war on women, you've spoken about it in fairly general terms, and at one point mentioned a man who had just become a judge. What are some of the overriding policies? I would suspect that most people have not seen it emblazoned in the headlines or in the lead story on the TV news that women are under any kind of assault, let alone a war against them. Where is this all taking place?
Well, a lot of this is happening not by legislation that comes up for debate in Congress. A lot has to do with the policies and regulations being implemented inside the departments of education, of health and human services, of labor. We have a situation where the Department of Education, without any kind of explanation, shelved its guidelines on sexual harassment in schools. The Equal Pay Initiative ended by the administration. All the materials about narrowing the wage gap removed from the Department of Labor's website. The Department of Justice just simply dropped a series of cases challenging sex discrimination in employment. Labor Department repealed a rule to help employees get paid leave for the birth or abortion of a child. It was that you could get paid leave under state financing guidelines, federal financing going into the welfare budget. That's been removed, ended by the Department of Labor, reducing by one the resources already so few that people have to try to get help. You name it. I mean, the Department of Education, reducing Title IX enforcement, establishing a commission to try to find ways to weaken the athletics provision of the Equality in Education Act. I mean, it goes on and on. And then you have things like the president's marriage promotion program, right? This program with no track record, no evidence that it works to accomplish any of the goals that it claims to, you know, be intended for, namely reducing out-of-wedlock birth, so-called, teenage pregnancy, no record that any of
this
it
is
works.
For the poor, for poor women, right? And this is the one they're going to spend $200 million to encourage poor women to marry?
In 2005, the budget proposed by George W. Bush would send as much money to that wacko program as is going to the whole Title X health care program, which provides health care clinics for low-income women all over the country, pap smears, mammograms, you name it. I mean, this is insane stuff, and maybe people will bristle at the word war, but I don't think it amounts to much less. I mean, there are casualties here every day.
Let me guess, Laura Flanders, who is driving this, the religious right and corporations. On one hand, there's a religious agenda here, and on the other hand, a lot of the things you mentioned, it would be employers would stand to profit more from labor under the conditions that have been rolled back.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we try to do in this book is to remind people that women's rights, issues having to do with women's rights, are not only about abortion and reproductive rights. And while there are some obvious moves that have been taken by this administration, very obviously bones thrown to their religious extremes, you know, the Partial Birth Abortion Act, the fetal injury law that gives the fetus equal legal standing with the woman. While there have been many moves like that, there have been just as many, as you just mentioned, that are all about weakening the constraints on corporations to behave as exactly as they will to bring down the cost of production and bring up profits. So you're right, and we need to see women's issues and sexism playing out in a way that affects our economy, all of us, as well as the way that affects our health and our communities and our family health.
Mm-hmm. This is all below the radar, to use kind of a cliche it's popular these days, because outwardly you never see any kind of policy decisions being made that have seemed to have any importance. In other words, they're all just these photo ops or things, you know, like this marriage amendment and what have you, all done for politics, all done for positioning. And yet, as you were saying, a lot of this, or in fact most of this, is way below the surface.
Well, it has to be, because you cannot get elected president or even selected by the Supreme Court if you are only supported by people who agree with those you have in office who claim that the pay gap for women is phony, who disparage sexual harassment protections as nonsense, who attack Title IX as a war against boys, and who view Social Security as too risky for women. People who want to do away with Roe v. Wade, called it the worst abomination of constitutional law in history, contraception a frivolity, not something that women need. I mean, these are the views of the people inside the administration, and I can give you, you know, chapter and verse where it comes from. These are not the views of mainstream America. Mainstream America, which is to say the majority of Americans, believe that laws against discrimination and unfair treatment in the workplace are right, that it is wrong to discriminate against girls in education, that child care is important, that sex education is important, that Roe v. Wade should be legal, that Social Security should be guaranteed, that violence against women is an important problem that's not getting enough attention, not something that's being overemphasized. I mean, these are you would never have got elected if you had run on Bush's actual agenda, a constitutional amendment to discriminate, a constitutional amendment to ban Roe v. Wade, and rolling back, ending the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, reversing the endangered species laws. I mean, the Bush crew have to feign being something that they're not, because they know people wouldn't buy what they've actually got to sell. So they pretend to be selling something else, which is why we're going to see at the Republican convention the Bush women trotted out, Laura Bush, Lynn Cheney, Elaine Chao, Condoleezza Rice. We'll see a lot of these women putting a different face on the administration, from Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Perle. And we've just found out who the lead speakers are going to be at the convention, and they're all pro-choice, pro-civil rights, right, pro-gun control Republicans.
No. All moderates. No.
Schwarzenegger, Giuliani, Pataki. Yeah. Exactly. The moderate face on an extremist party that keeps who it actually is and who it's actually serving under wraps.
Well, you know, there's a website. I actually can go to my website, peterwerby.com, and it's 1,000 reasons to impeach Bush. And it's astounding. I mean, and of course, it's partisan. And yet, you get the idea that these guys never sleep. I mean, how can they even find every nook and cranny, from the big pieces of federal judges down to the smallest little regulatory rule?
Yeah. I mean, you do wonder, who has the time to take off the information about the effectiveness of condoms on the CDC website? Who is paying attention to putting up there, in place of science, phony garbage about a relationship between breast cancer and abortion? Who is taking the time for all this? I'll tell you who it is. It's people who have been waging these wars for 25 years. They're still angry that the women's movement ever happened, by which I mean the civil rights laws of the 60s and 70s. They didn't like them then. They don't like them now. They're fighting the same fights that broke out in the 70s, and they're using every opportunity in office to advance their cause. And if they can do it without bringing laws to Congress, without having a vote in the Hill, they'll do it that way. Much easier for them to change the world through regulation and protocol and appointments than through anything resembling a democratic process. The big lesson for us, I think, is to recall that when it comes to an election, we're not just voting for the top of the ticket. In this case, you know, two of four guys. We're voting for a whole population of people who move into office with an agenda. And that's what you have to bear in mind as you work your political magic over the next few months, because both the Bush Women book and this W Effect book really brought home hard to me how what we see of an administration is the least of it. It's not even the tip of the iceberg. What really goes on is behind the scenes, and we'll find out if we ever do years down the road and years to come.
Laura Flanders, let me put it this way. When Kerry and Edwards win, will they just reverse everything? Will this just go back to the way it was?
Well, I doubt it, because we've got more changes needed to set priorities for people. I mean, if to go back a little bit, I mean, Bill Clinton passed the Personal Responsibility Act welfare reform in 1996, but it set a lot of these balls rolling. Why? Well, partly because he didn't want a big fuss in Congress before the 96 elections, but also because he was part of and was conscious of a media campaign, an sort of anti-education, de-education campaign that had happened in the country to cast women on welfare as lazy, to turn people off the idea of a social compact with the poor. And we've got a job of education to do to reorient ourselves to think of how we want our society to run. Do we want just dog-eat-dog capitalism, or do we want to think again about what is the function of the state, and what is it that we owe one another to advance our society as a whole? So while there are certain things, and John Kerry has said he will reverse reverse, for example, the global gag rule on family planning organizations that stripped critical family planning groups of desperately needed dollars in the name of combating, you know, abortion, even groups that never came near conducting any kind of an abortion. He said he'll do some things like that, and we can imagine different appointments. For one thing, the judges who are in there are there for long terms, if not life. And at the smaller level, it's going to need a lot of pro-action, proactive behavior to get us even back to where we were 4 years ago. My fear is some of these changes will be left in place, and then we'll be defending a status quo that's been, fatally set back.
Well, yeah, I always use this phrase that I stole from one of my friends. They said we're at the point where we're saying, "Please, sir, don't kill everything so quickly." And we want to be beyond that. You mentioned the word a couple of times, movement, feminist movement and what have you. And in many ways, although there are certainly feminist organizations and peace and social justice movements out there or organizations out there, we're now having everything depend on, will one or two guys do the right thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we have to return, I think, to the 70s. What's happened is that vast movements for major social changes, which brought us Earth Day and clean air, clean water, and the movement called environmentalism, which brought us, you know, civil rights and women's rights and softball leagues that girls could play in, not to mention abortion rights, of course, and you know, got homosexuality off the list of mental diseases at the American Psychiatric Association. Movements that had an agenda of equality and social conscience and mutual responsibility and shared accountability for what happens to our environment have become institutions that are defending laws that were passed 20 years ago.
Well, I think we certainly need to get back and start doing it ourselves. That is the key. And there are some wonderful articles in the W Effect, Bush's War on Women. It's published by the Feminist Press. You can go to feministpress.org. My guest has been Laura Flanders. Thanks for joining us again on the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, you're welcome, Peter, and I hope you come back on Air America very soon.